Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, December 20th, 2021. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. Or if anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, tonight's scripture reading, we're going to be picking up where we left off last week. We've had a lot of things going on this past week and a lot of problems and kind of shifted gears in what I've been doing and trying to reset the site, which I'll talk about in a few minutes. And I failed to realize that we probably should have had a Christmas focus for tonight. I do want to wish everyone a blessed Christmas this coming week or this coming week. And I think after Christmas, I think on Monday we'll probably focus in on a chapter that focuses in on the birth of our Lord. But tonight we're going to pick up where we left off because that's what we're set up for at the moment. And we're in the Gospel of Luke. And let me see if I get that open. Okay, chapter 15. So this is the Gospel of Luke. Read by Alexander Scorby. Chapter 15.
Then drew near unto him all the publicans and sinners for to hear him. And the Pharisees and scribes murmured, saying, This man receiveth sinners, and eateth with them. And he spake this parable unto them, saying, What manner of you, having 100 sheep, if he lose one of them, doth not leave the 99 in the wilderness, and go after that which is lost until he find it? And when he hath found it, he layeth it on his shoulders, rejoicing. And when he cometh home, he calleth together his friends and neighbors, saying unto them, Rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep which was lost. I say unto you, that likewise joy shall be in heaven over one sinner that repenteth, more than over 99 just persons which need no repentance. Either what woman, having 10 pieces of silver, if she lose one piece, doth not light a candle and sweep the house, and seek diligently till she find it? And when she hath found it, she calleth her friends and her neighbors together, saying, Rejoice with me, for I have found the piece which I had lost. Likewise, I say unto you, there is joy in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner that repenteth. And he said, A certain man had two sons. Them his living. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together and took his journey into a far country, and there wasted his substance with riotous living. And when he had spent all, there arose a mighty famine in that land, and he began to be in want. And he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into his fields to feed swine, and he would fain have filled his belly with the husks that the swine did eat. And no man gave unto him. And when he came to himself, he said, How many hired servants of my father's have bread enough and to spare, and I perish with hunger? I will arise and go to my father, and will say unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before thee, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. Make me as one of thy hired servants. And he arose and came to his father. But when he was yet a great way off, his father saw him, and had compassion, and ran and fell on his neck, and kissed him. And the son said unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven, and in thy sight, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. But the father said to his servants, Bring forth the best robe, and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand, and shoes on his feet. And bring hither the fatted calf, and kill it, and let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to be merry. Now his eldest son, was in the field. And as he came and drew nigh to the house, he heard music and dancing. And he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said unto him, Thy brother is come, and thy father hath killed the fatted calf, because he hath received him safe and sound. And he was angry, and would not go in. Therefore came his father out and entreated him. And he answering said to his father, Lo, these many years do I serve thee, neither transgressed I at any time thy commandment. And yet thou never gavest me a kid, that I might make merry with my friends. But as soon as this thy son was come, which hath devoured thy living with harlots, thou hast killed for him the fatted calf. And he said unto him, Son, thou art ever with me, and all that I have is thine. It was meet that we should make merry and be glad, for this thy brother was dead, and is alive again. Was lost and is found.
Okay, tonight we don't have a specific topic. We're going to pretty much go into an open forum quite quickly. Is Brent here yet? Has anyone seen him?
No, I have not.
Okay, just let me know when he's here. You can send a message through Skype. I'll pick up on it.
Okay,
thank you. Let me just close down what I have on my page here. Okay, a couple of things. We've been having a lot of problems with our website. We've sent information out concerning that fact. When we were running the seminar, things didn't turn out too well for people who were trying to get into the seminar. So quite a number of people were unable to make it because they had never been with us before and they didn't know how to get in to our page. And the Monday night page that we had was an old page. We have lost some information. We've lost some pages, but I think generally most of our information is there. We're not sure exactly what happened, but the technicians don't think that we're hacked. They said if we were hacked, they would have some evidence of that. But if they come up with something, they'll let us know. But right now, they don't think that that has happened. It was just a problem that just occurred within the system and caused a breakdown of things. And they moved us to another server. I have changed my focus of a lot of things that I was working on and now have focused in on dealing with this website. And it probably is a good thing to some degree because it forced me to pay attention to the website. And I see there was a lot of stuff going on, and I think it was very confusing. And I'm trying to organize the website now in such a fashion to be a lot easier to be able to get along and to lead the people through with sort of a breadcrumb trail that we didn't really have before. So I'm going to try to create that kind of a system. Right off the front page, we kind of try to lead them through a process. Although the front page, we've changed some things on the front page, and we've put up the seminar that we had last Saturday. For anybody who hasn't seen it, it's available up there now right here on our front page and out on Rumble. But there's going to be some other changes I'm going to be making on the front page, some updates, and pretty much a lot of these pages. Again, I'm going to make a lot of updates and consolidate pages and try to find a more logical fashion to run things, leading people directly into the educational process. For instance, you can see there's a page start here, which I'm still working on. So I'm kind of hoping that maybe by the end of the week, by Christmas, let's say, that the website should be in reasonably good order, and the pages that are totally missing, if we can't find them, we'll have to recreate them, and we'll get that back up and maybe within another week, let's say. But all in all, a lot of information is still up here. I'm not sure whether the courses are working. I know there were some complaints about that, and the techs are aware of that. They are working on it. I was told that by Wednesday they should have all of that stuff pretty much together and have solved the problem and corrected it so it wouldn't happen again. And we'll see where we go from there. So anyway, I just wanted to update everybody on that. Now, I want to focus in on tonight for a while, and then when Brent gets in, we'll move over to Brent and then over to Gerard. But Gerard and I will work right now together on an open forum, so if anybody has any questions or comments. I do want to try to focus in on the seminar, if possible, for people who have been, who visited the seminar, or people who have questions on the committees of safety. And another thing, I think at this point, it's not going to be this Tuesday, which is tomorrow, but next Tuesday, probably. I'm going to start another hour open forum. Gerard will probably join me on that, so it'll be Gerard and I on another open forum, 1 hour. Right now I'm focusing in on Tuesday. I know that there's another group that uses the room during that time at 7:30. We'll see if they can't move their timing. If not, then I'll have to try to squeeze another day in somewhere. But I want to bring 1 hour every week, where I will be available and Gerard will be available, both of us or at least one of us, to answer any questions people have and any problems they're having creating committees of safety. The only conversation I want to have on that hour, on that day, is questions concerning the committees of safety. Even ideas and thoughts, things we might have missed that people would add in on, and we can add it into our books. And I do know there is some stuff still that I have to add into some of the handbooks, but there's plenty of information to be able to start off a committee of safety and get things going. And but we'll be adding things and giving more education. We'll be doing a lot more video, educational PowerPoint videos. We've got quite a few, which a page, there'll be a page up underneath the underneath the educational tab, this may be it here. I'm not sure whether we have any videos up there at the moment, but, we don't have anything that's coming through. So this is going to be, this page is going to be for educational videos. And people should visit this periodically. A lot of the subjects you'll find that we will have covered on a Monday night, for instance, maybe our founding fathers and slavery, law and equity, the difference between a democracy and a republic. And but those videos, just the videos on themselves, the PowerPoint videos, which may be 20 minutes, maybe 40 minutes, but definitely under an hour, most of them. There will be some videos that we may not have covered on a Monday night that will be longer that I might post here because they're educational. But these will be educational videos, things that will really give you power and authority as we're dealing with our government, and with our bureaucrats, and with our courts, because knowledge is power. And if you understand, for instance, if you really understand the difference between law and equity, I mean really understand the difference, and by what authorities those people that have the ability to judge as judges in equity and the lack of the authority to judge in law, it really puts you in a whole different new position and a different mindset and a different understanding, and you'll be able to deal with these problematic individuals. I do believe that once we get exercising things and we get to the other side meaning that the military has already taken its toll on arresting all these individuals, for subversion. I understand there's over 300,000 indictments at this point. That's the latest I've heard. So there's a lot of people going to be arrested. A lot of the people who are having problems are going to be gone. And whoever's left is going to be very subservient to us. And we need to step up with power and authority and make sure that these people fear the people. Because when the government fears the people, we have liberty. When the people fear the government, we have tyranny. I think that was Thomas Jefferson, or it might have been Benjamin Franklin, who said that. And another thing I know Thomas Jefferson said was that we don't have government by the majority. We have government by the majority that participates. Nothing is different as it was back then as it is today. And all we need is a couple of hundred people in every county to take control of their processes, their judicial processes, their governmental processes. Then we will have the government that we deserve or desire, a government where we will have liberty. But with that, I do want to call to the Let's see, to the floor, Danny. I was speaking with Danny earlier in another meeting with some of NLA's leadership, and I asked him if he would come on tonight and talk a little bit about what he has done and what he's been putting together as the Committee of Safety. I think we can all learn from this. I don't know if Thomas is here. Thomas, we spoke last week, and we also spoke a little bit on the seminar. Maybe next week you might want to step up and talk to tell everybody how what you have done and how you have formed the Committees of Safety or are in the process of doing that. But with that, let me give the mic over to Danny. Danny, you got the mic. We appreciate anything you have to say here. Go right ahead.
Righty, well, I'm just a guy in Wisconsin, a busy guy, actually. I own my own business, involved in a lot of things, and a lot of community mining things. Don't have a lot of free time. We grow all our own organic food, so that takes a lot of our time also. But somebody, a friend of mine, told us about Gary Will's Wednesday Night Calls, National Liberty Alliance. He does a state, multi-state call. And so my wife and I, we gathered a few friends and we started listening to these calls. And that got me some fire going on in me. Then I ended up over at National Liberty Alliance's site. I was blown away by all the educational material you have there. As I tell people, it would literally, I think, take me a year to read everything you have and take all the courses, or more than a year. But at any rate, so I decided I wanted to start a Committee of Safety, and I pretty much had to wait until harvest time was all done because it's pretty busy around here with just my wife and I, and we can a lot, we freeze a lot, we dehydrate a lot, and to put up food to get us through the winter, too. So it was probably second week in November when I finally said, okay, I got to put time into this. And what I ended up doing was I read through a whole bunch of stuff. I put together a PowerPoint presentation, and I got a hold of somebody in our local Rod and Gun Club. He put me in touch with the president, and I worked it out with him to be able to use their space as a venue. And we had it set up for a Saturday. It was just a week ago, 2 weeks ago. I don't know. Yeah, I think it was just a week ago Saturday, I think. The 11th. Yeah, it was a week ago Saturday. So I talked to a whole bunch of people and that I knew would be of like mind. And I asked them to invite any like-minded people they knew. I also got in touch with some people in outlying counties. My District 5 leader, Gary Will, provided me with names of NLA members in some surrounding counties also. And I invited some of them and some other people I knew in some of the surrounding counties. And all in all, I ended up inviting almost 80 people. And Saturday, unfortunately, we had freezing rain overnight and our first snowfall that morning. I know it affected attendance some because I heard from people afterwards. But we still had a little over 40 people showed up. And I was pleased, especially with the weather, I was pleased with the turnout. At any rate, so after a prayer and Pledge of Allegiance, we started the PowerPoint presentation. And basically, talked just a little bit about all our corrupted officials, and how they're supposed to be the servants of we the people, but they've obviously taken upon themselves to be our masters instead, totally ignoring the Declaration of Independence that states that they derive their powers from the consent of the governed, and gave a few bullet points, maybe half a dozen of some of the idiocy that's going on nowadays, And as I said at the meeting, I mean, any one of you could add 10 more to this list. It's just going bananas these days. And then I also did two slides on local things. One was a local school district that is really getting into teaching CRT-based stuff, and talked a little bit about that, and I talked a little bit about in our town, and I'm in a town of city of 10,000, and right now their city council is debating about allowing public comment at their meetings because they don't allow that, which is insane in my opinion. But so we had a slide up there of one of the city council members and some of the quotes he said at a meeting, which were just atrocious. So I try to bring it a little bit more home locally. And then I just said, you know, enough about the problems. We need to time to act now about how do we fix these problems? What's some solutions? And I talked about National Liberty Alliance and how they have a really detailed plan for taking back the Constitutional Republic. I talked about how two main things were try to take back our government process, our judicial processes, and our political processes. And said that's where a committee of safety comes in, and that's a lot of their responsibilities and duties. So then I played the video, the Committee of Safety video that from National Alliance, National Liberty Alliance, that you have on your website. And when the video ended, we passed out sign-up sheets for anybody who's interested in learning more. And as those went on, I continued to talk and continued with the PowerPoint. And basically did a little more about talking about foreign enemies, domestic enemies, and how really they're using infiltration to change U.S. citizens into domestic enemies of our own constitutional republic. And, you know, how our profit-making corporations and billionaires and everything they've done to us, especially in the last couple of years, but started way before then. And then I kind of talked about what I saw as some of the initial things we could do as a committee of safety. Besides establishing a committee of safety in our county, I thought it was our responsibility then to try and get work with neighboring counties to try to have them start up committees of safeties, and then have them also invite neighboring counties and try to get to keep the ball rolling. And I offered to help all these people, these different counties too, and with a goal of getting a community safety in all 72 counties in our state. Then I told them that was one of the things we want to do. The other one to do is that we really need to really work on educating ourselves on common law, natural law, God-given law, and grand juries, petit juries, all of that, and really need to start holding all these corrupt people accountable and indict them, whatever we need to do. And I also said that even as we're educating ourselves to be able to play that role better, we can also go after all this corruption even now, because they don't even obey statute law. So I then talked a little bit about the Edgar County watchdogs and let them know this is just two men. That was it. And they started in 2011, and in 2021 they came out with their 10-year report, progress report kind of a thing. And all I did, I had the next four slides in the PowerPoint were just the four pages of their table of contents, and I just read out to the audience This is all the school districts they went after. This is all the municipalities they went after. This is all the colleges they went after. This is all the park districts they went after. Blah, on and on and on and on, 4 pages worth. And let them know that they had, in 10 years, they had gotten almost 500 people out of office. And if you think about it, that's almost one a week, which I think is pretty incredible with just two men. And impressed upon our audience that, hey, we'll have way more than that. Just think what we could do as a committee of safety. And then talked about the fraud that they uncovered, millions of dollars. Talked about how they had, I don't remember the number anymore, almost 40 or over 40 people indicted. Some of them are in jail now. I think, if I'm not mistaken, only one of them has gotten out, was not found guilty. And all the ones that their cases have finished. There's a lot of them still pending. Then I talked about how these same two guys went and formed American Watchdog, which is just to help train other people to do what they're doing all across the country because they've had so much demand. So then I showed a little 4-minute video on American Watchdogs. And then after that, I just said, you know, what I would like to do is to get at least 3 local committee of safety together, and once we do that, to have these guys come in and give us a training. So we plan on doing that. And then I said that as we get corrupt people out of there, we also have to fill those seats with constitutionally minded people, and including some of us in this room. So I talked about, we have an upcoming training in January in our area, given by the Foundation for the Advancement of Conservative Leadership. And my wife took this training a couple years ago. I haven't been to one. I'm going to this one. We're both going. But I encouraged our people in the audience to think about going. It's pretty inexpensive. It's $40 for a whole day training. But even reading the reviews, there was one of the reviews of somebody said that he had been trying for years to get stoplight cameras out of his community. He said, didn't go through the police. The only thing it did is, besides piss off the citizens, is it enriched the company who owns the cameras. And he said he tried for quite a few years. It sounded like 3 or 4 years. He never got anywhere. He went to one of these FACL trainings, and after the FACL training, he went back to his community. He got all of the cameras out of his community. He went to neighboring communities, got all the cameras out of there, and eventually got all the cameras out of his state. I don't know what state he's from. But at any rate, I was just trying to impress upon the audience that this is not a, you know, these are pretty experienced people putting this presentation on. They know their stuff, and, you know, we want to be as up in our game as possible, so to encourage us to them, all of us, to take this training. And then after that, I asked about any of the people in neighboring counties if they had any interest, and that gave them my email address, told them that they could contact me, and I would be very glad to help them. I'd come out and give a presentation they wanted, whatever. And right now, the county north of us is hopefully going to put a presentation on in January, and I'm working on the county, talking with a couple people in the county west of us. Hopefully we'll get that going too. And then I asked for anybody in our county, Columbia County, anybody who was interested in joining Committee of Safety, and went up there and passed out. I had already gone through and taken the template charter here and made it into a Columbia County charter, passed around so people could look through it. And then after we got a core group of people up there that really wanted to be a part of the committee, we asked anybody who wanted to volunteer for any of the positions. And we voted on it right there. and we elected, we have all four positions filled, and I've got a seal ordered, and we have we're going to be meeting on Tuesdays once a month, Tuesday evenings, starting next month. I'm waiting for a call back tomorrow from, I'm the chair, and the co-chair has got two places he's checking out for a venue. And once we get that lined up, we'll get a date. We're either going to meet the 11th or 18th. We'll probably meet that, whatever it's going to be, the second or third Tuesday every month. And we're encouraging every member at every meeting to bring at least a guest every meeting. And then, of course, if they sign up, then they can bring a guest the next meeting also. We got a whole bunch of the vows all printed out, and we'll have our seal by that meeting too. And we're going to have everybody sign their vows and have them sealed, and get our charter finalized with signatures. Right now we just have names in there. We'll get everything found out. We have to go over the proposal. We're also going to try and talk about what subcommittees we want, and take it from there. We're hoping to show this first meeting's going to have a lot of logistical stuff, so we may not have time for a video this first meeting. We're hoping to show a video, one of NLA's educational videos, every meeting. The thing I find about the videos, they're well done, they're succinct, and I think they help get people fired up. So I think they're an important tool, not just educationally, but motivationally also. So upshot of it is we started a community of safety. Like I say, I started the whole process 3 or 4 weeks before the meeting, and we ended up starting a community of safety we had 26 or 27 people that signed up then, and we're up to about 35 already. And I still have another half a dozen, I think, will be coming to the meeting and signing up. That's not even counting people bringing guests. So, at any rate, I was very pleased with it. And I also have to thank my district leader, Gary Will. He was a really, really good help. Very, very good at assisting me in anything I needed. And I would encourage anybody who wants to, first of all, I'd encourage anybody thinking about it to take the step and do it. You can do it. We can do it, and we need to do it, and we need to do it now. So I'd encourage you to do it, and I'd encourage you to reach out to your district leaders too, and probably be very helpful for you too. You don't feel like you're alone. I didn't have anybody help me set this whole thing up. I did it all on my own, but you could easily have two or three of you doing it. At any rate, we can do it, we need to do it, and I encourage anybody who even thinks is even thinking about it to do so.
Okay, Danny, is that it?
I guess, and unless somebody has questions for me.
Okay, we appreciate it. If anybody has any questions for Danny, we'll leave your mic open. Just mute yourself when you're not talking, Danny.
Okay.
What we're going to do is I'm going to take that what Danny had to say here tonight, and I'm going to cut that piece out and post it up under. I might create a page for that. I'm not sure. I'm not sure exactly what I will call it, but it'll probably be under education, or it could be under committees of safety. I'm not sure where we'll put it, but the point is we'll put that audio up there, and it'll just be Danny speaking about what he had done and his experience in creating committee of safety. And what I'd like to do is encourage anyone else that has an experience, either already has one or has one in the future, and would like to share. I mean, it's very important for people to share their experience, because that helps to motivate people. It helps give people ideas. So it's really healthy and good to share what it is that we're doing. So anybody that has anything they'd like to share, anything, just get a hold of, probably the best thing Yeah, get a hold of Jan. Jan@nationallibertyalliance.org. Send him an email. Let him know that you'd like to get on to speak to everyone concerning, you know, your experience and what you're doing in order to create a committee of safety. And again, you know, it would be nice to get someone to come on at least every week and to give us their story. We had a page up called District Leaders. It's a District Leaders page, and everyone should contact. If you're going to create a committee of safety, you should sign up. You're on the committee of safety page that you're going to create one, or you may find someone already in the process there, and you can connect with them and work with them to create one. We'll be more specific. Again, we're reorganizing the website, so by our next Monday night meeting, I know we will have everything together on the website at that point, and then I'll go through showing different things on the website and where this information is. But people should know who their district leader is. We'll get that page back up and make contact with your district leader, and they will assist you in any way they can to get you names of individuals within your state or in your county, and assist in any way they can, as Gary did with Danny here, to get things going on the grassroots level. The people have to get up and take control of their government, and this is the only way. It must be a true, free, and independent grassroots movement. And NLA is committed to that free and independent grassroots movement. We are here as facilitators for education, organization, communications, and just bringing it all together and being here to certify the necessary qualifications for people who want to become jury administrators. Very powerful job. It's a paid position. It's a career position. And we're looking for about 15,000 people across the United States. And you don't have to work in your county. So if those positions are full in your county, you can work in the county next door. Or maybe the courthouse in the county next door might be closer to you than your own, so it doesn't matter where you work. It's a job, but you will be controlled or monitored by the local committee of safety of that county, wherever it is that you work in. We're going to move on to the open forum. If anybody has any questions or comments, *6 and 1 to get into the queue. And if anybody has a comment for Danny, you can make that comment, and Danny can unmute himself, this mic, and speak. Gerard, I'll pass the controls over to you in a short while. And, of course, if you want to pipe in as we're going forward. And also, Terry, let me know if Brent shows up. Okay. Okay, thank you. Okay, let us take our first caller, Richard from PA. You got the mic. Go right ahead, Richard.
Brent. I have a few things. First of all, the most important one here that I'm dealing with is I had a township tear a house down, and it was in a trust. They said it wasn't in a trust. And from there, it went to court. I hired an attorney. I normally do it myself, but I hired this attorney who filed a civil rights claim, Title 42, U.S. Codes, subsection 1982. He filed 1983, and the judge threw it out. He went to a higher court. The court reversed it back to this judge. This judge ordered a mediation. In this mediation, they offered me $4,000, and they went up to $5,000, and I asked for $35,000. Can a judge demand or order you to go to a mediation?
Did you say that you had an attorney help you with this?
Yeah. At the point that it went to the mediation, the attorney, he was a good guy.
Yeah. It's unfortunate they're ignorant to the common law, but you do get a couple of guys from time to time that's good. But go ahead.
Yeah. Well, he stabbed me in the back when we was in this mediation. What he did is, you know, we was in one room, the other people were in the other room. Now, this is how crooked it is in this county. The mediation judge was retired, okay, and he was the uncle of one of the opposing counsels, okay. There was two of them. One was a company that tore the house down, Okay, they condemned the house because...
Did you accept the mediation, though?
Pardon?
Did you accept the mediation?
I didn't accept it. No, I refused it. I didn't even want to go there, but my attorney told me...
Do you know if it was worded in such a way that you actually opened a court of record, that you're in a court of law and not a court of equity, which is...
Well, there was no record. It wasn't even held in the courthouse. It was held in the opposing attorney's office.
Wow. Well, what I would do is I would make a motion to move... I'd have to think about how you'd want to word this, but basically you want to move over into a court of record. You had an attorney. Your attorney doesn't know anything about common law, and this needs to proceed now into a court of law, which is a court of record, which, I at this point in time, you have to explain to a judge what a court of record is. So you want to move it into a court of law, which is a court of record, which means it is a jury trial. You have an unalienable right to a jury trial, and in the Bill of Rights, it's codified there that anything over $20, you have that absolute right to a jury trial. You want the people to decide, and let them to decide your damages and everything. The last thing you want to do is pick up mediation and let some judge as a mediator, because already you could see the problems.
Yeah. Well, what happened is, when we got into this room, my attorney had enough nerve to say, you're going to be lowballed here. And I had a witness that looked at this house, and we met before this mediation, and he had enough nerve to tell me he already got his money. So I believe...
What exactly is the damages? I missed what the case is about. What exactly is the case about?
Okay, they tore a framed house down, a two-story framed house. Okay. The township actually broke into the house three different times, and they went to the kitchen, which was an add-on, one story, and pulled the plaster off of the roof. And
why did
took
they
a,
do that?
Well, because they wanted to condemn the house. So what they did is they took a black and white picture of the actual roof underneath the shingles after they pulled the plaster down, and they beat a hole in the roof. And then they took a picture of the hole in the roof. I found out that the code enforcement officer was being paid. He was on unemployment, full benefits, and they were paying
money.
Can you
prove most of this? Do you have any documentation? I mean, of any of these things?
Like, what do you mean? Like, yeah,
well,
they showed
pictures. In opposed to the pictures that they're claiming it was the condition number one, and the other thing is this is your private property. What authority were they claiming they had to come do this?
Well, they had no authority. They said it was their law, which was international law.
That has nothing to do with us. So just as long as you know that. But let me ask you. So this is your property. And they came in and took this house or took a part of this house down?
They tore it all down.
They tore it all down. And
yeah, they hired
you were only going for how much?
Pardon?
How much are you asking for damages?
Well, I told my attorney the property was worth $20,000 by itself, and the house had to be worth $15,000. It was in good shape. Matter of fact, it's in better shape.
I would even ask for a lot more than that, because look at, an old structure can be dealt with. You can salvage an old structure. You can salvage the foundation, you may have to do some upgrades or something and do a little testing to see certain things to build upon it. But, and how many square feet was it, roughly speaking?
The house?
Yeah.
I'm not even sure. It was probably like a 15 by 15, two rooms down, two rooms up, mm-hmm. and then it had an add-on kitchen and a bathroom. The house wasn't bad. It was insul brick. They were fining me every 2 weeks. They were fining me 12 to 15 fines under international law. Okay, and I was paying them, and each time we would.
And what kind of monies was that? What were they asking for that? And what kind of monies?
Well, it started out really cheap, like $50 a fine. And the last time I was, like I said, defending myself, the last one was the same judge that done the arbitration or the mediation. He sat there, and they started throwing all kind of dates out that wasn't even
you know, under their fines that they sent me. They were before the fines. And he eventually threw it out because I put it in a trust. Okay, it wasn't me no longer. And he threw it out, and the fines stopped then. Okay, but now they're trying to say there was no trust at that time, and there was a trust.
Well, the fact that they're trying to deal with you, and even though they're lowballing you, offering you a loan number, they don't feel that they have a strong case. That's what it tells me. I would push this into a court of law, which is where you get a jury and no judge. Judge has no say on anything. The rules of the court don't apply there. Only the rules of the court, the common law, apply there. And that's what I would do, push it that in that direction.
Well, is there any way that I can get some help on this? Because I'm shooting in the dark. I'm not a complete dummy about this stuff.
Yeah.
I've been studying the law. But
it's difficult. Well, right now we've got so many things going on. I mean, to deal with cases of this type would be almost impossible for us at this moment. You can get somewhat of an education, though, on your own. First of all, you take our courses to develop a common law knowledge and a heritage knowledge and of course, constitutional knowledge. I mean, it's all one and the same, ultimately speaking. And also, if you go into our site under our educational tab, I think it'll be under here. We have court forms, processes, instructions. You can read through that and get some information. We also have a page. I'm not sure where it's at right now because the site is a mess. Like I said, our site was destroyed over the weekend. But I'll get the page up. There is a page up here where you can learn, okay? We've got a lot of information on learn how the court process works and everything. We'll also give you a place where you can go. There's a lawyer out there that teaches people on how to make court access. I took that course in order to get my basic understanding. Now, he's not common law, but he at least gives you the procedure and the process. You got to look at the procedure and the process, but a lot of other things that they speak about, you kind of take with a grain of salt. And when you line it up against the common law, as you're learning the common law will show you what is an error, you know, as you go along. But there is a process, there is forms, there are procedures. You don't even have to necessarily follow those forms or procedures. But the key thing is this, is opening a court of record. When you go in through our course, and again, you know, if you really buckle down, I'll tell you, I took the course through this lawyer, and I did it over a weekend. I started on a Friday night, and by the end of the day, Sunday, I was finished with the course. I mean, I just drove myself to get through it and made lots of notes, and of course, there was a lot of different downloads that I had that I was able to create books that I can refer back to for different forms and different things. So that's one thing you want to definitely do. The other thing is focus in on, let me think which course this is. It would probably be the civics course. If you go into the civics course, there's a guy in there, Bill Thornton, and he's got a lot of audio tapes. He's got some flaws, foundational flaws, in his conclusions and thinking. For instance, he believes that that he is the king of the court when you go into the court, but that's not true. I mean, the king of the court is God himself, and the trial jury, is the king's bench. So they represent the king of the court. So they're supposed to proceed with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. And continue through maxims, the truths that are undeniable, and look at the facts and make a decision in a case. And I think you could build a great case. I mean, you already done it, and you could the case in itself is not a problem. It doesn't seem for you. You should be able to take this case before the jury, lay it out, give all your evidence, and go all through that. You don't need to know much more than that. The only thing you need to know is the basic paperwork to file to get the procedure going. And how that's filed. That's the key part that you have to work on. And if you go through our paperwork, you will find enough information to be able to do that. And as you're going through that, you can always come back here on an open forum and ask a few questions on this form or that paper or this paper. And so when are you looking to potentially, or when are you thinking to potentially try to get back into the courts on this thing?
Well, like I said, you know, my attorney actually emailed me, and he's kind of upset with me now because they asked me was in and asked me. He told me to send him $597 to pay my third of this mediation. And I thought, I have to pay a judge to hear this, which I thought was another bunch
It's another crime, in my opinion, Jerry. Mediation is always offered by the court. I mean, that's a good thing for them to offer the mediation and if you want to take the mediation, but it shouldn't cost nothing, you know?
Yeah.
We already pay their salary.
Right. And I thought, actually, that I'm paying all three parts, the two that, you know, I'm suing and my own, they condensed it into one payment and I'm going to pay it. And I told my attorney, have him send me a bill. And, oh, man, he just stomped. And, you know, it was just unbelievable, the stuff he was saying to me online through my email. And I thought, man, I can't believe this guy. He's, like, completely changing on me.
Well, the lawyers pay allegiance first and foremost to the court itself, to the judge. That's their top dog to him.
I know that.
Above all.
There's a whole bunch of secret societies down here, if you understand what I mean. And then I know for a fact my attorney is. And I'm pretty sure he rubbed up.
Can you prove collusion with the judge and your lawyer? Is there anything?
Yeah.
If you could prove collusion, I would file the suit against your lawyer, too. And I'd go much bigger than this. And if this judge bamboozled you into doing something, then he's denying you your due process. If he was blocking you from taking this into a court and you were perceiving a court that would be a court of law because you have a legal concern here, and you're being blocked, then you can sue that judge, you can sue the lawyer and go after them for denial of due process. And if they try to shut that down in any way, then you'd move that into federal court for cause. But you have to know how to do that. So you have a lot of studying to do.
Right.
You know, the question is how much time do you have to do what you need to do, and you know how soon do you have to do it? If you think you can hold things off for 30 or 60 days, can you accomplish all the knowledge that you'll need in 30 or 60 days? Is it possible? Well, it is possible. But that means you have to buckle down and really focus in on all the things that I had mentioned already. And I'll get that other page if you're up with us next Monday and you catch me on that. And I'm sure by that point I'll know where that page is at. And you'll be able to go to that page and get a lot of forms and different information. I wrote kind of a book. It's not really a great book. It was something I put together real quickly. And one day I'd like to sit down and really right through it, and that is court on court process, which would really lay out everything you need to know for this. I don't know if it's sufficient enough at this point to assist you with everything you need, but definitely that and the forms we have and the common law teaching we have and all the courses, that is, and also focusing in on potentially connecting with that lawyer. I know I paid $325, I think it was, for the course. I perceive it's probably the same thing. And the course was well worth it because it really it gave me a really good understanding of how things work. So, and again, you can come back next Monday and ask more questions on this.
Yeah, I'm going to have to. So really what I want to do is I want to demand a trial by jury then.
That's what you got, yeah, and that's the key. Let me think about this a minute. Well, look, if you put some papers together once you start to accumulate enough knowledge to do so, and again, you do that by reading, you know, look at, we've filed a lot of papers with the court, and you can go and look at how things go. I mean, it's under grand jury, and you'll find, for instance, an action we filed against YouTube, against the judiciary, and also some other, we have a grand jury docket, which has a lot of papers and a lot of forms, but by reading how cases that we have filed, you'll start to see how the structure of a case is as far as length. And it's very simple. It's not really complicated. You know, first of all, you want to refer yourself to one of the people in this court of record, and then you want to define what a court of record is. And a court of record is a court of law. It proceeds according to the common law. and you want to put some footnotes in for that. And you'll find all those footnotes in these papers that you can go look at right here. These writs and decisions and orders and writ quo warranto and all these papers that we filed. And these papers in themselves is a huge education. I mean, just huge. Because if you follow along in the case and you read through it, and after you got read through it the first time, you go back and you start looking at the footnotes, that's where the real power comes in to realize the documentation in these papers that we file. And when you cut and paste out of these things, because I don't know whether you order it in Word or not, but it's probably just, they're all PDFs. If you copy then paste the contents here, paragraph here and a paragraph there, you also want to go back and cut and paste the footnotes and put the footnotes in your paperwork. But the key thing is this: when you file your papers want to make the point that you're one of the people of the state of whatever state you're in. I'm one of the people, and in this court of record, I'm suing, A, B, C, D, and then you want to define what a court of record is. That is a court that moves according to the common law. It's a court of law with a jury. Okay, that's the key, to get that information in there like that. I've been doing it without making the point to really explaining it, but I should have been doing that all along, because so many judges have no clue, or they just ignore the fact. But when you put it into their face, they're not going to be able to ignore it that easy. So Anyway, work on your education and come back on Mondays, ask us some questions on papers and concerns you have, and I'll tell you where some of the things are that you can go. And I'll try to find we probably have that information on that page where you can go and take the course off this guy that I took the course from.
Okay. Well, there's a few problems. I had a stroke about 3 months ago, and it kind of screwed my vision up. I'm having problems, actually reading the stuff. That's one of the problems. The other one was...
You have a vision problem right now. Is it repairable?
No. If it will repair itself, it'll be okay, but this is going on the third month, and it hasn't even really started.
But is your vision getting any better as time goes on?
No, not really. It has to do with high blood pressure and
you can go to the court with a letter, they have to accept a letter, and I do everything in affidavit form, so I would do a letter in an affidavit form, and I'd make sure that I filed it with them through registered mail, and let it be known in that letter that you're having some health problems and eyesight problems, and that you're going to need some time, but this is not over, and I do plan on revisiting this case, because you probably have a case number and everything, right?
Yeah.
I plan on coming back to revisit this case in a few months. I see my lawyer is not representing me well, and so therefore I'm going to school up, bone up, whatever you want to say, and I'll be back, And then 3 months or whatever, you take that time to get educated. In 3 months or whatever from that during that point in time, then you can come back with some good paperwork. And again, you can bring some questions to us concerning paperwork as you go along over the months. But I can't spend too much more time with you because we got other people in the call. But anything final?
One more thing. Your recordings. Is there any possible that you can make a private folder for individuals so they can take out things out of your recordings and put it in their own file so they can review them again? I contact you guys about
that. Is there any way we can what?
Well, make an individual file for people, or even make it so these recordings can be colorized, so you know what you really wanted to work with. You have so many of them now that, I lost the place where I was at. I contacted you and was talking to you about the two IRS forms that you fill out to get out of the IRS thing.
We don't teach filling out forms to get out of the IRS. You just need to not sign their paperwork and not participate. And it is kind of difficult to get out if you've been doing it over the years. And There's no real easy way to do it, and if you're employed, if you're an employee, you know it's going to be a hard battle with your boss to continue with not taking tax out.
I'm retired and everything. I just wanted to pick up on that stuff, and you said that there were two forms to fill out, and you know at this point it's not so much about that. It's trying to find it in the recordings. You know, I didn't write the date down or anything.
Right. Well, our MP3s are up there for download, and you can come and dissect them. There are different programs you can use. I'm trying to remember the program. Audacity. I use Audacity, and that's a free program. You can download Audacity, and then you can take your MP3, open it up into that program, and once you open it into the program, you can cut it up into pieces and save it as a, you know, from this point to that point, save that part of the conversation and give it a title. I've been trying to get someone to do that for us for our Monday night calls so that they can take individual calls and give it a title and put it into frequently asked questions or something like that, or Q&A or whatever you want to call it.
Yes.
So anybody who wants to volunteer for that, we'd appreciate it. But I'm going to do a little bit of that myself, like the individual who spoke earlier. I'm going to cut that up and put it into a place. I'll figure out how to label that up. So.
Yeah. Well, like I said, even colorize, so you can colorize what you're interested in, your individual, you know, thing, something like that even would be beneficial then.
The time to do that. We need volunteers. I mean, I got such a workload, and I got to now lay a lot of things aside to reconstruct this website to get it proper again.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm gonna hold the time.
Because really, we had too much stuff up there, and too many things that were distraction. Really, I think so. I really want to focus in on really what we're doing, and things of this nature to help people and get into the court. So. Next week, I can give you more information on the location of the booklet and the information and the forms that we put together, and again the address to that lawyer. Meanwhile, start working. I'd start in the civics course, because you go through the civics course, you're going to get history, you're going to get an introduction to the Constitution. Bodnarik, Michael Bodnarik gives that. He's really good at it. You'll get. Bill Thornton, who will talk about common law. Again, there are a couple of principles I think he's off on. When those topics come up, we make the point on where we think he's off. But generally speaking, he's got a lot of great information in that, so his teaching is valuable. There's a lot of things that you can get out of that course. To start preparing you and getting your mindset corrected for a common law thinking in order to apply the process.
Yeah. I have a buddy that was an attorney, and he's no longer an attorney, and he was helping me set up my pages and stuff to go to the court, you know.
He should be able to. Yeah, you should be in good shape. If you put him to, if you do that and then take his papers that he gives you, and, you know, for lack of a better term, common law it, you know, get the...
Yeah, that's the problem. He's like all the others. They're you know, set in this law.
Common law terms and information in there. You know, again, one of the people, court of record, suing this person was such a thing, and in defining what a court of record is, that's the key. You see, your thing is wanting to get in front of a jury. Once you're in front of a jury... Look, you don't have. There's no law involved. What you have is maxims, truths, positions that you lay out. That's reasonable, and facts to prove your case and your damages. That's all you have to do. I mean, and that I'm sure you could do. Any of us usually can do that. We can defend ourselves with our own facts and gather together our own evidence concerning our own cases. It's the paperwork to get beginning is the tough part, and to make sure that they don't throw you out.
Right. That's the whole key. Okay,
with that, I gotta move on now.
Yeah, I'm sorry I kept you so long, but I appreciate your time. I'll probably be back next Monday.
Yeah, we'll talk again. Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Gerard, you want to take control here, and you and I will run open forum until Brent gets in? Hello, Gerard. Maybe someone can beep him on Skype, see if he's awake. Okay, let us take our next caller, Dan from North Carolina. You got the mic. Go right ahead, Dan. Dan, you got the mic. Star 6 and 1. Anybody wants to get into the queue, by the way? Star 6 and 1. Dan, are you there? Okay. One more time for Dan from North Carolina. Okay, we'll take our next caller, TJ. What state you're from, TJ? And by the way, there's nobody else in the queue right now, so star 6 and 1, anybody wants to get into that queue. And Gerard, if you're back yet, pipe in. TJ, what state you're from? You got the mic.
Oh.
All right, I'll pass the controls to you, Gerard, and we'll continue taking calls until Brent gets here, right?
Thanks, John. Can you guys hear
me? Go right ahead. What state are you from? What's your first name and your state?
Okay. Tracy, and it's Montana.
Tracy from Montana. You got the mic. Go right ahead.
Okay. I was calling. I haven't had the best of luck the last couple weeks trying to create an account, and I know there's been technical issues. I was originally seeking help with underwear you have stuck in an abusive court to follow the process for the amicus curiae.
Right. We do help people. We have our forms are all set up. It's very simple for us because it's pretty much the same thing over and over again, but we do habeas corpuses. We mm-hmm. also help people with non-judicial foreclosures, and mm-hmm. people stuck in a court, we'll assist them and do an amicus curiae. Also, if people have lost their children, you know, we'll do habeas corpuses for that.
Yes.
Family court.
Yeah, that's me.
Yeah. So we will do those things,
yeah.
And we don't really win them, but the thing is when it's just piling up evidence against the federal judiciary, because we end up taking it to the federal judiciary to deal with the problem, and they don't champion the Constitution, which is what their job is, what they're to do. So that is just evidence, and we nail that to the door of the Supreme Court, and we keep nailing more and more and more of these cases. We've got over 100 federal judges, and we've got many other judges that we've indicted. We've nailed that to their door to let it be known. You people are not obeying the law. You're not championing the Constitution. You know, people are being destroyed out here by different organizations, you know, mortgage companies and so on. And the courts are compliant with that. They're allowing the process to go through the system. They're not putting their signatures or seals on the finale of the case. And they give the appearance as if it went into court and hasn't. And they're participating in what's called a non-judicial foreclosure, which is a violation of the right of due process. You can't take my property without due process, period, end of subject. So what I'm trying to make is this: all the cases that we keep compiling on, at some point in time, we're going to get justice on that, because it has to eventually be dealt with. It's not going to be dealt with until we get to the other side. But I have to say, there has been a few cases that that have gone good for us. There are not many, but a few. And a couple of habeas corpuses that went good for us. But generally speaking, they're just evil.
Yeah, and I believe it. I've been through everything you've said and more. I am the poster girl in Montana for abusive process. They've taken my child as a result of speaking out and mm-hmm. trying to practice in common law. I haven't seen her in nearly 3 years. I have a judge that will not let me speak and has recently taken to appointing counsel over me without consent and without right. So I'm looking at taking it to federal court. And then,
well, that's where you'll have to end up being. As a matter of fact, did we do anything for you?
No, because I
would suggest a habeas corpus.
Yeah, I was trying to file, you know, follow your process online, but I can't even sign in. I can't donate, so I cannot connect with anyone.
We've been having a problem for the past week. And, you know, I've been told by text that by Wednesday they should be pretty much finished off cleaning things up. But And I'm cleaning up the pages on the site, and I think by next week we'll be in much, much better shape and hopefully back up and running well again.
Okay, so is that the best way to proceed? Just follow the procedure of signing up and donating under abuse of power?
Well, what we do is we ask for a donation of $100 or more for to do a habeas corpus or to do something for non-judicial foreclosure. And I would say, you know, we do amicus curiae also. But I would say in your case, you know, produce the body, you know, habeas corpus. How dare they take your children? They need to, and we do that in a federal court. It's the federal district court's job to do this. Now, you know, I got some responses I'll be doing in some federal district. You're in Montana, right?
Yeah.
I got some responses I got to do on some federal courts, so hopefully I'll get to it in the next week or two. That might be helpful. But what I would do as a habeas corpus to get your daughter back. I mean, and damages, forget about it. You're talking looking in the millions, in my opinion, to take your daughter. This is destructive not only to you and your family, but your child has really been destroyed by this process that they have done. They have stolen your child, kidnapped you. You know, even if there was some kind of a problem that they viewed as abuse, they still need to be working with the family. And if they had to remove the child, the whole part of the process is to reconnect, you know, family and child back together and fix the problem, because that's what they're supposed to be doing. They're not there to make it a criminal thing or something and to just steal your children and your property. It's not what a court of justice is about. A court of justice, you know, true courts of justice, people don't realize, is really restoring not only the injured party, first and foremost, but even the person who injures the other person, restoring that person also, because that's what a court of law is about. It's all about restitution and restoring both parties back into society and into the right path, so to speak. But this is, you know, it's a, when they steal children, it's outrageous. It's just, it's the most disgusting thing.
Yeah, they've done it all to us. They've, you know, nationally televised me as a kidnapper.
Yeah, they tried to do
this to me. When it was my child and all sorts of fun stuff.
When my children were young, they tried to do this to me too. And they tried to take my children. I didn't have enough knowledge back then on what to really to do. But thankfully it worked out okay for me.
And I've filed petitions to dismiss and things, and they just keep slapping me down and threatening me, putting contempt on me. So I'm standing on my own in Montana, and that was kind of my point, hoping to connect with other people that have done this.
Mm-hmm. Did they try to fine you with contempt?
That are maybe standing up.
Did they try to find you?
Oh, yeah. They've tried everything. You name it.
Did they incarcerate you?
They
did? How long
have
they
done that multiple times now?
How long for?
5 months. Five months without warrant.
Again, they don't have, listen, a judge, this is important to understand, under common law, no political animal, which is what a judge is, okay? No political animal, no judge, no servant of the government has the power or the authority to fine or incarcerate. It happens all day long. All our courts are operating in that fashion. That's civil law. That's Babylonian. That's a judgment by the city. We're supposed to be in common law. Only a court of record, a jury, has the ability. That's called due process. Anything outside of a jury is not due process. And so only a jury has the power to fine or incarcerate.
Sure. Yep, I have tried, but I'm one person. I seem to be standing alone, and I'm pretty easy to squash when it's one, so that's why I was on here trying to connect.
Well, if you're going to move into federal court, you know, we'll do the habeas corpus for you, but you should start preparing and getting your evidence together for all these things and put together something for a case and go for these for millions.
I'm ready. It's just I want to do it right the first time. I don't have any room to sludge.
Take heart in what I told the person before you concerning the necessary education that you want to get and the things you need to look at on our website. And again, all these courses, just look at. It's a shame that we were not educated in school. We need to make sure our children, by the time they get out of ninth grade, that they're properly educated. And there's no reason for children to go to school longer than ninth grade. You can achieve a college-level education, today's college-level education anyway, by the ninth grade if our children had a proper education, was taught how to think and not what to think. Because they're going to school to be indoctrinated, And to make them good Marxist or communist or whatever, word you want to put in there. If you take, we have a ninth grade test that we got from the 1800s. I believe we have it posted, and I'm going to put that more in the front somewhere at some point in our educational area. A ninth grade test from the 1800s that is clearly a college level, and few people could pass that test today. And so the things that we have not learned, okay, in our history, in our heritage, in our common law, and who we are as a people, and what the foundation of our law is, and that we are built upon, ultimately, upon the Bible. We're built upon the law of God. And so you need to get that education back, and that's what National Liberty Alliance provides. When you get through all of our courses and then start looking into furthering your education in these little PowerPoint videos we put out on different subjects, you're going to then have the proper education that you should have had. But it's going to take time. And if we want to save this nation of ours, we're going to have to spend time and money to do it. It's not for free. We should be thankful that we don't have to spend it in blood. We can do it in our time, our re-education, and putting money out. Injured ultimately by these people, okay? And we're all casualties of war because there's a war going on, and it's been covert for a long time and has now become overt and it's become obvious. So.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Gerard, you ready for me to pass the controls over to you, and I'll hang out for a little while longer with you till Brent gets here. And anybody else wants to get into the queue, star 6 and a 1 to get into the queue. We only have one person in the queue right now, star 6 and a 1. Okay, Gerard, do you have need of the showing your desktop or anything, or just leave
it?
No,
I don't have anything to show at this point.
All right, so I'll just leave this up here. One other thing, I want to make an impression here. I'm telling you, reading these papers is an education. Okay, here is a Corwanto. Let me just go through this real quick. I'm not going to go through the whole Corwanto, just the beginning and the layout and what we put together and how a court case is really presented and you begin with. Okay. In this case, this is a writ of quo warranto of we the people against the United States Supreme Court, the United States Senate, the House of Representatives, Federal Judiciary Commissioner, blah, 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 so on and so forth. And it's an extraordinary writ quo warranto demanding something. Okay. Now, this may not show so much on how to write a paper for your own case, but we do have a lot of other papers in here that you can get examples from. But the education in here is the key that you're going to get by reading this. Okay, you get a really great education, and you get exposed to some of the codes that you can use against them. Remember, codes can't be used against the people. Statutes, codes, regulations has nothing to do with us. That has to do with government agents and agencies. That has to do with commercial activity, in the case of the federal level, with interstate commercial activities. That's what that is for. And we can apply these codes up against the judges because they, too, operate under the codes. And Title 18 covers all the agents, okay, because inside there they talk about criminal activities, when they violate the law, when you get kidnapped, literally they speak about being kidnapping. And that's what happens when you unlawfully are incarcerated. You're being kidnapped. And those are the charges you want to go up after these people for. But anyway, go ahead, Gerard. We got one person in the queue, star six and a one for anyone else who wants to get into the queue.
Did I unmute Ross? He's still...
No, not yet.
All right, let me pick him.
There you go.
Go ahead, Ross. You are unmuted.
Hey, Ross.
I have talked to my dad and a person in my family, my dad, and he said he thinks it is not possible to eliminate the party system.
Yeah, I know. A lot of people believe that. And, you know, lacking the knowledge of who we are as a people, lacking our knowledge of our heritage, lacking the knowledge of where we come from, which brings us back to heritage, lacking the knowledge of the Constitution, particularly the Bill of Rights and the Declaration of Independence, lacking the knowledge of common law in itself and maxims and how the people are the lawmakers, lacking the knowledge of our founding fathers that speak about parties, and they even speak about this in the Federalist Papers. We have a paper on this, and we did a PowerPoint video on this, where they speak about parties that and they call them factions, and they're political parties. When they spoke about them, when they become a private, particularly George Washington said this, when they become an association, a private association, and seize control, we're going to lose it all. And that's what they did. You see, the political parties can be gotten away with in the courts through the federal. We could take it into the federal court and have this done across the whole nation. Why? Because we can prove without any problem, no problem at all, we have so much documentation, fact after fact after fact, because they've hidden nothing, okay, to prove and show that the political parties are anti-constitutional, that they're destructive to this nation, and that they're run by party boss, they're corrupt to the core, and they codified the unalienable right of the people to have their own committees, okay, to be the committee men, which the whole committee men process is the people themselves, to bring the people into power as far as who they wanted elected, and they've robbed that against them, codified it, and placed party bosses above them. We can show that and prove that in the court of law. And we will resurrect the George Washington Clause, which was in the law here in New York State back in 1909. It was removed in 1911, but in 1909 it was still in the law. And that forbade, okay, any private association from acting as a political party the way that they're doing it, as a private association. And both of those parties are private associations. It's not the people. The people are supposed to have control over the political process, not private associations. We have two private associations that have taken that on. We can win this battle and shut them down through the federal courts, just like we could do the same thing with the Bar Association. Really a slam dunk on that one. We got so much evidence on that. But we have reams of evidence on both situations, both the Bar and the political parties. They work together, and the political parties created the system for, the bar created the political system for that political system, you know, the parties. And so they've created the necessary statutes that people think a law that governs the people, and stole it all. Washington said we would lose our nation through political parties, and we have. Jefferson said we will lose our nation through the arrogance and the tyranny of the judges. And we have in both cases. We need to take both back, and both have to be done away with as far as the Bar Association and political parties must go. And we could take their power away by doing their job, by being the people.
Yes, I just also looked at the Clackamas County Republican Party website, and they have the same thing the community safety has. Chairman, vice chairman, and a secretary and treasurer.
Right, four individuals.
They modeled off of the community safety.
Yep, four individuals control every county, and they pay their allegiance to four individuals in every state, and they pay their allegiance to four individuals on the federal level, and that's how everything gets decided and done. And we have, at the end of the day, a choice of the criminal on the right or the criminal on the left. That's our choices. Every once in a while, a good guy gets in, but that's pretty rare. So, yes, and what that is the normal committee structure. And they created a private association. They have private phones. They get private funding. They get private money. They get money from the federal government. They take money from the people. They use the people as slaves to go out and walk the designating petitions to put these criminals into office. Okay? When we start going out and as the committeemen during the election time to put people onto the ballot by walking those papers, the designating petition, and I found a way we can get around this whole process, which I'm going to lay out on a paper shortly. I'm not in a big hurry for it because the election isn't until later on in the year. But in any event, I'm going to lay that out on how we can walk the petitions and how the form needs to be made out and how we can put the people on the ballot. And once we start putting people on the ballot, okay, it's going to take away from them, number one. Also, those other committeemen that are slaves to the statutes and the party bosses, okay, once they become aware of us and we have opportunity to invite them over to be with we the people instead of being with, it'll destroy them altogether. We can remove their forces, okay? So they're destroyed by removing their forces. They're destroyed by the people stepping up and doing their job that they need to do to put the people onto the ballot. They're destroyed by the law by bringing them into the federal court and just laying out the facts of what they have done over the last 150 years, whatever it's been, and lay it all out. We can shut down. I know people think we can't, but they have not looked at it from the proper mindset of who we are and what our heritage is, and the power and the authority that we the people have, and the power of being able to nullify anything that we please. We call it unjust, we nullify it. And when we have the power and the authority in the county, nullification, it will be simple.
Yeah, I think the problem is the government schools conditioned us to believe we need the parties and all that stuff.
Exactly. They have. They have conditioned us. You're absolutely right. Good point. Because they have conditioned us to believe that there is no other way. Look at, all we have to do is go back and look at the history they've been covering up, just like they've been covering up the news and removing everything. Do you know, about 80% or maybe more, maybe 90%, of the videos that we have up on our website have been taken down from YouTube. I mean, a huge number. I mean, we're now moving new videos up for a little while now using Rumble, and some of our YouTubes are still up, but most of them are down. And there's a lot of pages we had to just shut down because we've lost all the videos for them. But you know, I've got a lot of those videos. I have to find some time to upload them to Rumble and find a way to structure them onto our website, which is not too overwhelming, though.
We have to recondition ourselves on our history and the heritage to be able to restore our country.
Absolutely, yep. And, you know, for anybody that did not go to our, let me see if I can get this on our thing here, to our seminar. On our front page, we have the seminar up if you missed it, and it's very powerful and talks about some of this stuff that we're talking about right now.
Yeah, I also made it slightly late because I went to the wrong app.
Yeah, there was a problem on the website, and it reverted back to an old date. And our website has really been beat up pretty bad. We're restructuring it now.
Yeah, because when I was on the last Monday's meeting, you told us it would go, you said it was on the same app of the meeting, Monday meeting.
Right.
And I went to the wrong one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that page reverted back to an older date, and we had used a different platform back then. So that's what happened.
Give me that email before the old passcode and all that.
What was that?
Go to conference. It was, the code was 1776.
Yeah, I think so. I just clicked my, you know, join on my app to get in, and it takes me in on my browser. Apparently, you've been coming every Monday, so you should know how to get to the room, right?
Yes.
Yeah, because anything we do, any kind of an event we have, it'll always be in this room. If we have another seminar, it'll be in this room,
yeah,
right here. Always.
I enjoyed some of the meeting, so I missed the majority of the meeting.
Well, you can watch it. It's on the front page. It's on our front page. Yeah. You can click on the seminar and get it right from the beginning. The only thing you'll miss is we had some music playing prior, about 15, 20 minutes prior, which was not recorded, which is good music,
also
by the way.
Huh? I missed the Bible reading. That's the only thing I missed.
Yeah, well, the Bible reading you'll get right in the beginning, so on this seminar. So, matter of fact, let me just click the button just a second here. You can see this is where it starts, right there in the gospel reading.
Welcome to National Liberty Alliance.
So.
Yeah. Okay. Can we eliminate the iOS too?
Well, I think that'll be done for us, and if it's not, we'll get rid of it. Yeah, look, at the Federal Reserve is going to be destroyed by gold, and that's Trump's plan, destroy the Federal Reserve, which is the IRS, by gold.
I think we the people have to demand to go back to God.
And well, that's what the Constitution requires, absolutely.
Yes. That means we have to restore the Constitution enough to reinstate that gold coin and silver coin.
Absolutely. Look, we will be brought back to under the Constitution. It's up to the people to have government by consent and take control of our government. And if we fail to do that, then we deserve whatever we get after that. And trust me, you know, God tells us the hearts of men are evil. Who could know it? And evil men will seize control of anything that's not guarded by the people, anything that's powerful and gives them power and authority, they will steal it and take it. And but the Constitution, under Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, I'm looking to see what clause it is that talks about only gold and silver shall be a legal tender.
It's the one that talks about the weights and measures.
Yeah, that's on 5. To coin money, regulate the value thereof, and of foreign coins, and fix the standard of weights and measures. Okay. But there's another, I'm looking for it right now to see exactly which one it is, what number clause it is, that talks about only gold and silver is to be for...
That's, I think, Section 9, actually.
Do you think it's in section? I thought it was in 8. Let me see if it's in section 9. You may be right. Privilege, no captation, no tax, no money, okay, no title of nobility, writ of habeas corpus. I don't see it in 9 either, but I know it's either in 8 or 9. You're right.
The thing that talks about the gold coins has the gold coins. The only way that we can pay our debts.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what that is. Talks about that.
Well, exactly.
The only way we can pay our debts, you have to use serving God to pay off the debt.
Right, exactly. That's what every state must acknowledge and accept, gold and silver. Gold or silver. And that's where we used to be, but we're not no more. And we've been
because Nixon took us off of it.
Yeah, but we really were off of it a lot longer than that because, you know, look at, we had inflation even, ever since the Federal Reserve came into play, we started to get, inflation.
Well,
I know in the 60s and the 70s we had inflation. By the time we were at the end of the 70s, I believe gold was like $300 an ounce, something like that. And but if you go back in time, the ratio was $20. $20 was the price of an ounce of gold, which means 20 silver dollars equaled 1 ounce of gold. Today, it takes, just think how many dollars does it take to make an ounce of gold now? I mean, I don't even know what it is. $1,500? I don't even know where it's at right now. $1,800 an ounce? So,
yeah.
And that tells you the ratio is so far off, the best thing to save is silver.
Yeah, I feel like I invested Wikipedia. I looked up lawful money. It mentions gold and silver, treasury bonds, and treasury notes are the lawful money.
Uh-huh. Yes.
That's what we need to get under lawful money, not legal money. That's fake notes and Federal Reserve notes.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree 100%. I'm trying to still find that clause. I don't know why I can't find it. I know it's in 8 or 9, and I'm just not getting it. But it is in there, gold and silver. All right, anything else, Ross?
Nope, that's it.
Okay, thanks. Gerard?
Hang on, I got to find my mute button here.
Okay.
Hey, Ross, have your father read Washington's farewell address, and in there he complains a lot about the parties. That might be a first start for him.
But yeah, anyway. it's also in the seminar, too. We lay that out.
Yes, also, I shouldn't tell him constantly debate him each time. I just need to give him the paper.
Right. Yeah. Well, those are all things you can try. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make a drink. All you can do is make suggestions. You know.
Oh, the mule. The mule, the water. Mule.
Okay. Well, we got a couple people left. Okay, we got Sharon in there next. Sharon, you've been unmuted. Go ahead.
Before we go any further, just real quickly, because it wasn't in 8 or 9. It was in 10. Section 10 of the Constitution, Article 1, Section 10. No state shall enter into any treaty, alliance, or confederation, grant letters of marque and reprisal, coin money, emit bills of credit, make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debt. So there it is. Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1. Back to you, Gerard.
Okay. Well, we got Shannon open. Can you hear me?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead, Shannon.
I guess it was and that I contacted last week to do an intake form. My husband realized he was being railroaded when the attorney, the bar attorney, gave me the court file. It was a big mistake because I started tearing it apart and never asked for anything that we needed, to ask for. And so then I was just found fraud, paper fraud. I mean, it's just all throughout the court file and everything. So we asked if it was Article 3 courts. They said, no, we don't have Article 3 courts here. We don't do Article 3 courts. So we did a motion to move the court. Well, we are American nationals.
What state were you in, by the way?
Florida. We're in Florida.
And you were in a state court or a federal court?
Yeah, it was in the Pasco County Court.
They wouldn't be an Article 3 court per se, but they would look at the question would be to them next time you do this is if they were a court of law or a court of equity. That's the key question. And if they say a court of law, then you say, okay, then statutes, regulations, and codes have nothing to do with this court. We're operating under the rules of the common law, and let's go forward. Of course, they're going to choke on that.
That was trying, to do that and try to move the court. So, but us, we're American nationals. We got everything, birth certificate, everything registered, everything's in the common record of deeds, property, everything there. and fictitious name, copyright, everything. And so we could not go up into the court because you can't, you know, a live person can't go up against the fiction. So therefore, she went to move the court. The judge went to move the court, and then at the same time, for the bonds, issued a thing for the bonds henchmen to, you know, Capius and stuff to come and then just, you know, just come break into our property, and, you know, and everything, and then, you know, they took my property. So he was taken in, and then I did an intake for him, but they can't do an intake for him because he gave his God-given name. So it shows that, you know, he's in custody, there's no arrest queue. And then they finally went to court, and I tried to go get my property out, and they kept wanting me to, you know, they kept saying, do you understand? They wanted to try to put me into contract. I said, I'm not contracting with you. You know, I just flat out just, I know what they're up to. So he said he went to court Friday, and then he said the judge committed fraud right in front of his face, you know, tried to put in stuff for him. He said, no. He goes, and this bailiff took, he says, all my rights reserved. You know, I give none. He gave, you know, and so, and he gave his God-given name. She goes, I'm going to give you a public defender. He goes, no, I don't want a public defender. No. And then so the bailiff got a paper. He signed it and gave it to the judge. Well, I noticed that she went and did an off bond, and then now it's like all kinds of money. Well, I found all the bonds on Fidelity Investments. They all have CUSIP numbers. They all been paid from day one. They've been paid 10 times, and they're earning so much interest off of them. Mm-hmm. So what I've done is since I live in the Republic, I filed a 56F form, and so I go through the Postmaster General out of Philadelphia, where the only place that's de jure for the United States of America. I make myself my own clerk of the court and the judge. So
the best state way to deal with this problem would be to move it into federal court for cause and demand that the federal court champion the Constitution because they violated your right of due process.
They violated my right by coming into my home and pushing me out of the way.
Well, there's many things, and anything they've taken from you, if they've taken your freedom, everything has a value.
Right.
And you need to sue and lay that out. You have to have a really good wherefore clause at the end. Be very specific, and because when you get into that into the court, ultimately, if they do default on you on the other side by not responding, because they have to respond. Now, if they came out after you, I presume, so you're the defendant and they're the plaintiff or the whatever you want to call them. But
yeah,
you have to turn that around.
My husband is still in there. And it's all equity. It's all equity. It's all about
he's
the money.
Still in jail?
It's a banking system. Yeah, he's still in jail. It's a banking.
Well, you should do a habeas corpus.
Well, I mean, the thing, he gave his God-given name, so he has an arrest inquiry with showing that person, his straw man, is not, I mean, you know, they just have his body, his God-given name, and holding him. They're kidnapping him.
Yeah, listen, I understand everything you're talking about, and everything you're talking about is absolutely true, okay? But when you go into the court, you should try to stay away from that language and steer the position that they have to fraud, okay? And denial of due process. Use the legal language that you can have. Use the fact that you're one of the people. You don't want to call yourself a citizen. I know that. You know, but that there's nothing wrong with that word. They've just polluted that word. In any event, you know, you're one of the people, and you need to sue them back and bring them into a court of record. One of the first things you want to do is lay that position out that you're suing them back, countersue, and you want to make criminal charges, kidnapping, and all that other stuff. And at the same breath, you want to move it into federal court for cause. For violation of due process is probably 4th, 5th, and 6th Amendment, and you can find a lot more than that. Remember, the case cannot be tried. When people make the big mistake, they go into federal court, and you will be thrown out in a heartbeat because they're looking for anything to throw. They don't want to hear any cases, okay?
Right.
So they'll throw your case out in a heartbeat if you try to argue the case in the federal court other than the constitutional violation. And in that violation, you're looking to be restored, and you have to have a wherefore clause. So when you walk away from that federal court, you walk away with a couple of million dollars.
Yeah.
Okay. And now you're back into the other court, which is now required to give you a court of record, which means a trial by jury, unpolluted, unstacked,
right.
And then and you got to make sure that it stays that way. And if you read our jurist handbook, you'll have good knowledge of that, and you'll have to pay close attention, and you have to bring into the court any violation. You see, if I had to go into court, I know they're going to pollute the jury. I know they're going to stack them. But I would then, in the court, I would educate the jury, and I would use that handbook to educate them. They'll try to stop me, but then I go right back into federal court for cause, violating my right of due process, my right of having a jury unstacked, a fully informed jury. I mean, the whole case can easily be produced, and it sounds like you have enough knowledge to do that, but you need to think about moving to federal court.
I made myself postmaster general, so anything that comes out of my post box to them, it's a court of record. So I did a bill of lading. So I stepped into the private side then. So everything is, you know, addressed to them in their God-given name with who they work for. So now I'm coming after them in a private side, asking them all these questions about, you know, about a postal the PO boxes, because anything that's meter stamp is fraud. I mean, it's fraud on paper. I could tear it apart. I was very good in English, so I tore the whole thing apart with the syntax. So, you know, in the CUSIP numbers, and find that it's bond, penal bonds are traded. People are traded like cattle. They're trading on the SEC. That's what they're doing.
Oh, exactly.
So, and the thing is, I mean, you can do it. I'm working to do, you know, to claim all the treasury and the, you know, set off. But they wanted me to do stuff right there. I said, you're not going to implicate me in your fraud. But I think it did touch this one guy, because he came back to my husband and said, who is that feisty woman out there? He goes, I don't know, but he goes, what is she talking about? He goes, I don't know, but you'll probably find out soon. That's what he said. So, but
well, again,
I mean,
you know, look, you know, get more, listen, get more into the common law language than the man on the land language. You know, you're using a lot of things that are being taught on the internet that can get you into trouble. And again, I'm not saying that it's not true, because I came in that way too, and
right.
I came to understand those things, and I went and filed my declaratory paper into the county. I forget what it was called.
We even have live life births that are.
But all that stuff doesn't need to be done. And because all you have to do is bring to the facts to the table that this is all fraud. This is not the way it is to be.
Oh yeah.
But you have plenty of language in the courts from the U.S. United States decisions over the last couple of hundred years. You've got plenty of language that defines the meaning of things. Okay,
right.
That's what we use them for. You've got common law. You've got a founding fathers. You've got a founding documents. You bring all this stuff together. It's just so powerful. It cannot be. They can't stand up against it. Okay.
Oh, I know.
And you don't have to make the argument of the straw man argument, which again.
Right.
All that does, let me tell you what happens with this, okay? The straw man argument in the court, okay, once you start making that argument, they try to make you look like a fool. First of all, nobody in that court understands what you're talking about, so they all think you're nuts to begin with, okay?
Well, what I did is I locked it down so they couldn't dip into it. I did. I made a foreign trust. So
Again, what I'm trying to tell you this is that the position you're making in the court, it makes it easier for them to walk all over you.
Oh,
okay?
Right. Yeah.
If you come in with rock solid stuff that cannot be denied, cannot be pressed out, like the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Federalist Papers, common law, the rules of the common law, that the meaning of law is a court that, you know, a court of law is one that proceeds according to the rules of the common law and according to common law, built upon maxims, and lay out the facts and show the fraud, okay, show the fraud of their positioning and thinking and what they're doing. Whatever they come up, you can come up and show that fraud and lay it out, and with their own words from the courts themselves,
right.
Okay?
Right.
So that's where you really want to battle. You'll get a lot more leverage and a lot more motion and movement of your court in that way. And if you frame things properly and then you move it into the federal court and you frame things properly, again, stay away from the fiction stuff. And it is true, I'm not arguing that point, but don't try to define it, okay? They're not going to bring it up, so you don't have to bring it up, but what their actions is fraud, and you can show and prove that that is fraud.
Right.
That is
right.
That is tyranny. That is a subversion. You know, you could show it right there.
Using pages and pages of the U.S. codes and stuff that they did, but there's a lot of treason in there also. So,
well, the codes are to be applied upon them. So yeah, there's a lot in 18 and USC 28 you can use against them.
Yeah, I have all that. I have all that printed. I have everything. You know, all that stuff because I have the Federalist books and I've been reading all that and I got all the code book and everything. So I write it down and you know, print it up, and then I just put it in a, you know, an outline.
If you need help with a habeas corpus, you can get a hold of intake, and we do.
Okay.
We'll help with habeas corpus from the Unified Grand Jury, the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury.
Okay. Now, I'm not sure. Because the last judge, they went in that and they did a different arrest date. Another arrest date, and they offset these bonds and stuff. So, like before, when we tried to put in for the, the intake thing, because he gave his God-given name, they said, oh, well, he gave his God-given name and plead the fifth. We can't get him out. You can't get him out. So.
All right. Well, look at two things you could do. Okay. Number one, you can act on his behalf as what's called the next friend. And you have the right to come in to do that, and you have the right to write the papers and move the court into into the federal court for a cause. And remember, you got to find constitutional cause. You get into the Bill of Rights. I know you can lay this whole thing out with the 4th, 5th, and 6th Amendment, maybe even the 7th.
Oh, yeah.
But you lay this out, and you show the violations, you show the damages, you show that he's been kidnapped, you use the USC against them. You know probably the proper places to go in USC 28 and 18, and you can lay that out, how he's been kidnapped, and that without just meaning reason. Also, it was a court of equity that kidnapped him. It wasn't even a court of law. They have no power to fine or incarcerate. Look, if you work throughout our website, we have lots of cases and stuff that lays this kind of thing out, which, for instance, that they cannot fine or incarcerate. You want to bring that in. They have unlawfully arrested him. They have unlawfully, incarcerated him. They have unlawfully seized this or seized that or whatever they've done. But remember, you're only going in for the constitutional violations. And when you come out of that court, you should come out of that court with a decision of that court for that other court to cease and desist, because that should be in your wherefore clause, for that court to cease and desist, okay, number one.
Right.
Number two, you want to be in very clear. Each violation of your rights has a value. Every day in jail has a value. You have to figure that out, and this should calculate into the millions, okay? And you, when you do this and lay this out point by point by point by point by point by point by point, and then you get that judge to make that signal. It's an uphill battle in the federal courts too, because they don't like to stick up for you and your rights. But if you can get them to do it, and even if you just get them out of jail and then pursue other things further at another time, that's good enough. But the thing is you have to have a good wherefore clause, because once that is filed and done and that court makes the decision, they got 30 days or whatever, you take your paperwork and you file it with the sheriff. You could probably file right away. You file with the sheriff for collection.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the sheriff in our county is kind of corrupt. He's up on federal charges himself.
Well, maybe because he's on federal charges, maybe he's a good guy.
Well, maybe.
I don't know, but a lot of our sheriffs are bad guys only because they're ignorant to the law and they think they're doing the right thing and they think they're obeying the civil law being the law, which is no law at all. When we educate them, now they become evil if they don't do the right thing.
Right, right. So do you think I have a chance to do the habeas on this then?
Well, you have a chance. You could do a habeas corpus. We can assist you with that. Get a hold of intake at nationallibertyalliance.org.
Okay.
You know, we ask for a donation of $100 or more, And what we do is we'll lay out all the paperwork, put it all together, and there's a series of paper process that we go through. We do it all. We get it all together for you and put our seals and everything on it, and then we mail everything to you, and then you serve it.
Okay. Okay. I can do that. I have no problem. I have no fear of them.
And talk to Jim at intake@nationallibertyalliance.org.
Okay. intake@nationallibertyalliance.org. Okay.
Right. And get educated on our site. Get to know the common law.
Yeah,
get
that to be.
Huh?
Yeah, I bought that book.
You bought the Government by Consent?
Yes.
Okay, you're going to get, that's almost 1,000, it's just under 1,000 pages. You're going, wow, you look at the memorandums in there, powerful.
Okay, it should
everything be. I'm talking about is in that book.
Okay, great, yeah. Oh, yeah. Cause the more I read, the more I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this has happened to us.
Yeah, lean more towards the common law than the commercial activities that you're going through. Lean more the other way. You'll get a lot further, and you have a much more powerful case.
Oh, yeah.
A case that a jury will never go up against.
Well, I know, because the whole time things just didn't get, you know, seem right to me. And then when I got that, when he gave me that file, because he was in a real big hurry, and he's demanding it back, and I said, no, you're not getting it back. Sorry, you're not going to get it back. So, I mean, I tore it apart, so I found it fraud. This is why he's hiding. He didn't do anything we asked him to do. Wouldn't, you know, let my insurance company, my vehicle settle for, take care of the damages. I mean, it's just got ridiculous. So then I asked, and then he started laughing. He goes, I haven't been around since the Queen in the 1200s. What are you talking about? I was like, yes, it is.
Yeah, they're very ignorant to these things.
Oh, yeah.
They
he's part of the Treasury. He was a big VP of the bar and just everything.
Well, yeah, look, at all bar attorneys, they've been trained as minions of the New World Order. First of all, they've been polluted in their original education. Then when they went into college and they went to the bar education, okay, mm-hmm. Then they started to tell them what the law is, and everything seems to be working the way they're saying, and they believe that the civil law is the law. They believe we are under Roman law. That's what they believe. They believe that that's what we should be, and the common law has been abrogated, and they don't even know how, when, where, or why. But it was abrogated in 1938 through the Rules Enabling Act of 1934. And so they don't understand common law. They don't understand the foundation of our law, which is the Declaration of Independence.
Right.
They don't understand what the difference of law and equity is. It's all combined for them, because that's exactly what they did in 1938, is they combined equity and law and called it civil law. And people were asleep. They wasn't paying attention.
Right. My niece is she was a bar attorney and stuff, and she was going into appellate, and I sent her some stuff, and I said, did you learn common? Yeah, we learned common law, and I sent her some stuff. She goes, we only learned a little bit. And she started reading it, and she turned in her bar card.
Look at what she learned in bar school with common law is precedence. That's what they teach
them.
Precedence is common law.
She says, it's not nothing like that. So mm-hmm. I said, she says, I can't do this to people. I mean, she didn't really know. So she says mm-hmm. that she's stepping out of it, because she says, I'm not going to be held liable for them teaching me the wrong way. So I said, well, you need to jump in and help the people.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that goes.
Well, look, you should take her knowledge, take her education, and come here and learn the rest of the story. And then in the near future, she'll be really set up to really represent and help people in the common law, because she'll understand both sides, and she'll understand the court procedures and the processes, which most of which we'll keep, okay? But we don't have to use their forms. They put forms together so we're somewhat uniformed, but we can make our own forms up, and we can change them into a different direction, because we have that right to do it.
Yeah, because you have to change the wording of their forms and change them in your own forms, because it sets you up into their paper fraud. It's paper fraud. A lot of it is. The way it's worded.
Yeah, I use their forms.
Almost, like all dictionary, almost all of it. So
I use some of their forms. I use their structure, but I change things inside of it. I use their paperwork for filing an index number and filing a case. And I change, it looks just like their forms, but it has common law stuff in there, court of record, important to the common law, all that stuff. They don't read that. They don't know that. And it gets into the court and becomes part of the record.
But the clerk did not. They didn't put everything that I asked to put on file in to the case. But because,
well, add that also in your wherefore clause.
They admitted to me they're not a court of record. So I did a thing for the clerk and demanded it to file it on.
Well, again, if they refuse, that was a crime. You can find the title, right, and make sure you get that into your wherefore clause for damages also.
Right. Yeah. So then I had special delivery mail to get it onto record. Mm-hmm. That was my record too. So they had to sign it. That was my record to get it all there. But yeah, they told me, no, we're not a court of records. We just do transcripts.
All right. Anything else before we move to the next person here? Anything else?
Nope.
Darren? Okay. All right. Appreciate the call. Thanks. And, you know, again, bone up on the common law stuff, really. And you already understand enough that it's going to be so powerful, you know?
Right. In the meantime, I'll do this intake form probably this evening.
Yeah, whenever you want, get a hold of Jim. Intake at nationallibertyalliance.org and... And Jim will start the paperwork for you.
Jim?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Good deal. All right. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Anybody want to get into the queue? Star 6 and a 1. Go ahead, Gerard.
I'm going to unmute Shannon now.
No, not Shannon.
Not Shannon. I'm sorry. Curtis.
Star 6 and a 1 for anyone who wants to get into the queue. I got to get away from my computer for a short, right?
Okay. Curtis, you're unmuted. Go ahead. Or no, you're not. Here, let's try that.
And keep an eye out for Brent. I haven't seen him yet. I know Terry.
Yeah, Brent just joined. Brent just joined on his phone.
Okay. Why don't you take Curtis and then we'll move over to, then you can move over to Brent, Gerard.
He's not unmuting for some reason. I don't get it.
Huh. Let me see if I can unmute him, okay?
Look at him and nothing's
happening. Oh, you got him. Someone got him. He's done.
Okay. Yeah, I think I hit the button wrong or something. You hear me now, though, right?
Yes.
Okay, great. Sorry, I'm a little blind still and not to hearing everything, but I'm a lot better than I've been in the past couple of years. I did want to ask a question. I had actually put the phone up because I was wanting to three callers back about the 10th Amendment thing and the money. But you guys resolved that before I got on. But I also wanted to ask about these mask mandates that they've got. Some of the places are requiring it, like hospitals and so forth, government facilities. Has anybody talked about that? Has there been any conversation on that? I mean, if you don't want to wear it for whatever reason and they decide they want to make you leave out of a, you know, like a hospital or a clinic, is there any recourse? Have anybody thought about that? Because that really agitates me to death. I've been thrown out so many times. I'm tired of being escorted.
Well, they got a couple of different methods that they use to throw you out, you know, and they're all against the law, you know what I mean? None of it is a law, actually. Really, it's an edict, and we're a nation of laws, not edicts, you know. So, I don't. What state are you in?
I'm in the communist state of Virginia.
Virginia, okay. Like over here, we've had some counties say that they're not going to enforce the mask. You know, they decided that they didn't want to enforce it now, and they gave notice to to the governor, because ours here, the governor put it on. I don't know who put yours on, right? Yeah, probably your governor, yeah. I would imagine.
It's the governor, yeah.
Yeah, so it's not a law, first of all.
Yeah.
And sometimes they don't even write it out. I don't know if it's even written in your state. Like, we had a mask mandate, but there was no mandate. There was no anything.
It's coming from the health department, and they every yeah, time I
the health department doesn't make law, really.
Exactly, and no. I said, well, I asked them, well, where's your authority to do this? And they said, well, the CDC. I said, well, what does CDC have to do with it? That's the United Nations mandate. What authority do they have here? I said, you're violating. I've told them they're violating my rights, and I make a big scene. But I said, well, they give me a choice. Well, you can either put the mask on, and I put the mask on my head. But I ain't covered my face. And they're like, you know, that ain't going to work. It's got to cover your mouth and your nose. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to eat my snot. And if you're going to do that, then I would require you, I want to require you to wear a butt plug, because I think that thing stands out nastier stuff than what I'm getting. Well, this is what I've been saying to them, you know. But when they do these stupid things, you know, I said, this was supposed to be a two-week deal, and I got no problem with that. I'll deal with it for 2 weeks. But it's been 2 years, and I'm done with it. This is about control.
All it is, it's virtue signaling is all it is. It says that you will comply. And they're supposed to make provisions. Like if you say, well, I have a condition, I can't wear it, they can't even ask you what that condition is. And they're supposed to make provisions for people that can't.
Well, yeah. Well, I brought that up too, but that didn't work either. You know, they don't care. It's their mandate. And, you get this real stiff-armed nurse. I can get one or two
enforcing an unconstitutional law, that makes them liable. In other words, you can't say you're just following orders, because now you took it upon yourself to enforce this unconstitutional thing, right?
You're acting as an agent of the government.
Tyranny. So what happens is, they become liable. The little Miss Karen that's telling you to do it, she's as liable as the governor is. So, because it's not a law. And that's what a lot of times I've told them, call the police, because it's not a law. And a police officer, you know, he's supposed to uphold the law. If it's not a law, he's got no business upholding anything then it's not in his preview. You know, and some of the police are smart enough that they don't want to get involved in it, you know. But it's an uphill battle as far as that goes. Usually they'll try to kick you out. And they misapply the trespassing statute, because they'll say, well, it's a private business and the owner told you to leave, and so now you're trespassing.
Yeah, that's why I left.
Right. First of all, a hospital can't tell you that. It's a public place, and they take federal money. So it's a public place. They're taking taxpayers' dollars. And as far as that goes, even Walmart takes taxpayers' dollars. They're not a private business. They're open to the public. And by telling you can't come in because of your mask, that's already been established in law as discrimination. They're not allowed to do it. So it just depends on how hard you want to fight them and what path you want to go on, you know. It's an uphill battle, but I think it can be won. And there's organizations out there that are fighting it that, you know, use the proper language and stuff. Matter of fact, Brent is here, and he's I'm sure he would speak to this too. He's talked about the mask. He doesn't wear them, so he's probably got a couple things to say about that. As a matter of fact, you know what? We should open Brent up. Brent, are you here? Because it's getting late. I want to give him a chance to do his thing.
I absolutely refuse to wear it. I won't. And even my wife tried to make me put it on because she was embarrassed, but I ripped it off. They could say I'd had enough. I'm not doing that. I ain't doing it.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. It's cruel and
unusual. Every time I get out is to go to the doctor.
I'm sorry. What was that?
I said the only time I get out is when I go to the doctor.
Right. Well, you got to say you got a medical condition that doesn't let you wear it. Like even if it's mental, I go crazy. I kill people when I put it on. Brent, is that you? Did I hear you?
Yeah, that's me.
You're very low. Hang on.
Oh, maybe it's me. Yeah.
Hi, let me introduce Brent. This is Brent Allen Winters. He's the author of The Excellence of the Common Law. He's a common law lawyer. His website is commonlawyer.com. Brent, you got the mic, and Gerard, you got the controls.
Thank you so much. This is Brent Allen Winters. Oh, he said that already, commonlawyer.com. And it's a habit. But I'm Brent. My comments are my own, may or may not comport with the points of view of the principles of National Liberty Alliance. Matter of fact, Gerard and I had discussed the mass situation before, and I remember Gerard, well, we didn't discuss it so much. We were talking about it on this call one Monday night, and Gerard said, well, I think the best thing to do is to know the medical ramifications of wearing a mask. I agree. That is a good thing to know. In other words, I think breathing's a natural right, and I don't want to impede it. God gave me the breath of life, and to despise the gift is to despise the giver. Now, that's the law. That's real law. That's the law of God. And Gerard, they mix together. That's my point of view. It's a religious thing. Religion. Religion's a good thing if it's the right religion. And you got the right religion, believe God gave you the breath of life, then don't impede it in any way. It's hard enough. When you get older, I've watched men die, and you probably have too. People in my own family die because they couldn't get enough air. Back in the old days, people used to smoke cigarettes a lot, and that's the way they died. And it's hard to watch. And it's a tough thing to have to go through. And it's helped me appreciate breathing and how fundamental and basic it is. And this is all about destroying your ability to breathe. It's demonic at its core, what they're doing, to try to require people to cover their face and mouth. But I'll tell you a quick story about all that. See if I can get out of this noise. I'm at a truck stop and all these trucks. So I'm in the Walmart here not too long ago. And I was walking back to get some ice cream, and I heard a racket up toward the... Matter of fact, this is the littlest super Walmart in the world. The littlest super Walmart in the world. At least that's what they call themselves. And it is. It's got everything the big ones have, but it's little by comparison to others. And I heard a racket, and I walked up front, and there's a woman standing at the counter. And the cashier was saying, I'm not going to check you out until you put on a mask. And I said, wow, this looks interesting. And the girl that wanted to get checked out, she got a little louder. She said, here's what she said. She said, I will not be bullied. I thought, well, that's a good line. And she was adamant about it. And the guy behind her had a mask on, older gent, and he just kind of looked at her funny, and finally he said, hey, he said, I'm with you. And she turned to him and said, well, why don't you get some kahunis and take that diaper off your head? Of course, I backed off a little bit. I didn't know what was going to happen next. Then the manager of the store came up and started saying something to her, and she said the same thing to the manager. Said, I'm not going to be bullied. That's what she kept saying over and over. I'm not going to be bullied by you folks. And the manager ran away, ran to the back of the Walmart, and then the cashier walked away, followed the manager, and then pretty soon another lady came up and checked this gal out that wouldn't put a diaper on her head. That's what happened. Well, that's a proper response. Now, to argue the law to people over this question when they challenge you is a waste of time. I like to talk about the law because I deal with that kind of stuff sometimes, but it doesn't do any good. The law is only good for the courtroom, fundamentally. Oh, there's a few other times it may be, but some official hearing, you can use the law. Outside of that, you're free to settle your differences the way you want, do whatever is right to get along with folks. So don't be trying to pull the law on them. They don't care. If they cared about the law, they wouldn't even begun to talk about putting a diaper on your head. So don't argue the law to them. That much I've got figured out. There's other ways to deal with it. First fundamental principle, this is my experience, my conclusions for what they're worth. The first fundamental thing is don't budge. Don't give in to them. And that may produce hardships. Like the gentleman said, I'm tired of this after 2 years. I've been thrown out of so many places. Now, I can say with all honesty, personally, I have never wore a mask. I've had some tough experiences. I've been refused service. I travel a lot. I can think I've been to about 20 states in the last couple of years. I have been refused service in a gas station in Montana, of all places, and also Walmart tried to, but I found out it was all a bluff, and I just kept walking. They tried to stop me, and I said, thank you for letting me know that you're going to try to arrest me, and I just kept walking, went in, did my thing, and then when I walked out, I stopped at the door and asked the fellow that had tried to get me to wear a mask why he was doing this. He's a real friendly guy, and really, you know, he's trying to make a living, I guess. He told me his wife was so blasted mad she would never come into Walmart because of the mask, and he said that the town there, I forget the name of the town, was out near the middle of the state somewhere. A town, that was in South Dakota. What did I say, Nebraska? I don't remember what I said, but it was in South Dakota. And, of course, South Dakota, it said, is a place where the government there never required masks. But in this town, they did. The city council or whatever it was had put out this. I asked the guy at the door, I said, would you have called the sheriff if the management had told you to come and get me? He said, yeah. I said, well, what good would that have done? He said, well, nothing, because we've tried it before, because the sheriff won't do anything. See, we're at a time in our country when we don't, the government is in disagreement about what they will and won't do, and it's up to us. It's up to us to do what's lawful and to capitulate to the foolishness of these mandates. And again, just to make it clear, mandates are just another name for I'm telling you what to do, and if you don't do it, I'm going to try to arrest you. What is law? What is really law? Maybe that's the real question here. Law is the way things are, and they ain't going to change. Law is the way things are, and they ain't going to change. Well, then what would that include? Well, that would include what God says and what we find in nature to be true that's not going to change. And is a mandate on your face the way things are and it's not going to change? No. No, it's not. As I've often said, we have two volumes of law. The laws of nature, unwritten, in the nature of creation, they will not change, and we observe them. Sometimes we're right, sometimes we're wrong in our observations. But they're not going to change, whatever they are, if we find the true pattern in nature and relationships between men and men, men and things, as Blackstone says. Once we've discovered them, they're not going to change, then we live by them. We don't plant in the fall or in the, we don't plant in the fall and try to reap in the spring. We'll starve to death. We've learned that law of nature, the law of the sower, it's called. Then you can go to the Bible and you can find things written in particular statements of fact. They ain't going to change. And we live by those. But what about these things that legislatures say and court opinions? Oh, they may be true, they may not be true. And it's up to you. No one else, just you, to make that decision. I talked to a Lutheran pastor at a Christmas party the other night. I got invited to my friend's church. And getting a long discussion about who gets to decide what's right and what's wrong. And he said, well, the history has always decided what the true doctrine is. And we don't have the option of deciding, of going to the Bible, for instance, and deciding for ourselves. And didn't argue much with him because I was visiting. I didn't live there. It wasn't my group. But I disagree with that, not just a little bit, but to the point of violence. That is what will destroy us. And even if you say that, the truth is, in the final analysis, you're going to have to decide what's right and what's wrong. And if you don't decide for yourself, you're going to be somebody else's lackey, and you're going to substitute their will, their conclusions, their brains, their conscience for yours. And that's exactly what they're trying to get us to do now in a way all over the world like has never happened in the history of humanity. Everyone has to wear a diaper on their head. Saw a video the other day of a fell in Germany playing Santa Claus at some department store. And the police arrested him. Yeah. Well, he decided he wasn't going to do that. Was he right? Well, I think he was right. I think there's some things that are obvious. I think that's obvious. And I never thought that I'd see so many Americans put their brains in a 5-gallon bucket and fire a 45 slug into it. And that's what I'm watching. You don't think that people, you wonder why the Nazis did what they did and the whole country went that way? Well, you're watching right now. That's what people do. That's how gullible humanity, no matter how educated, no matter how smart in other ways they are. And it's up to you, friends, neighbors, and kin, to not join them. It's up to you to not think for you don't even have to think. This isn't a matter of thinking. This is a matter of just seeing obvious truth and doing something about it and not participating. Now, if you choose to not participate, like the gent said a while ago, you're going to get thrown out of places. And Jesus Christ does not call us to attack. He calls us to stand fast. And that's what he intends for us to do. And if we don't do that, then we become useful idiots of the evil empire and the evil one himself. Now, if you try to stand fast, sooner or later, you're going to be attacked. And when you're attacked, you're going to have to defend yourself. And when you defend yourself, people are going to call you the aggressor. You're the solution. They're going to call you the problem. They're calling me the problem now. I'm not the problem. I'm the solution to their problem. But they're blind as bats. I don't expect them to open their eyes at this point. That doesn't change my duty. My duty is to stand fast, like Jesus Christ said, like Paul the Apostle said. Stand fast, don't move, occupy, said the Savior. That's one way to put it. It's said a lot of different ways in the laws of nature, the laws of nature's God. And to not know that is to not know what your duty is. So I just pass it along to you for what it's worth. And Gerard, that's enough for me to say this evening. And thanks for letting me on here at the end. I'm traveling, and I didn't know if I'd be able to get on. And I appreciate you letting me talk. Back to you.
Yeah, I appreciate that a bunch, Brent. That really helps me out. It makes me feel like I did the right thing anyway. I felt it was the right thing, and I haven't backed off. But, you know, I try to make a scene, and I try to give enough information out to encourage others to take the stand, and that's basically why I do it.
Oh, look, at you're obeying nature. There was another article out that basically bolsters your argument, and it was put in by John Hopkins Center for Health Security. This fellow did, a senior scholar at John Hopkins Center for Health. I had this on my other show last week, so this is a fresh one. There have been other mass studies. They don't ever listen to them, but this guy says that they are actually calling it ODMS, oxygen deprivation mass syndrome, now sweeping across the globe. And basically, when you wear any kind of mask, whether it's an N95 or a homemade one, it cuts your oxygen down, and you rebreathe the air that you breathe it out, including any pathogens which land in that mask and then end up multiplying, and you breathe them back in stronger than when they left. That's a fact, and it's a fact that science even upholds. This is how crazy they are. They're denying, oh, we're going to go with the science. If you're going to go with the science, you wouldn't be requiring masks. And they've known this all along, because in the pandemic of, I think, what was it, 1919 or whatever, they did mask studies, and they found out when they went to mask, they had something like a 1,500% increase in cases. It made things worse. And they knew that even before this corona thing came out. So this guy says, look, it causes oxygen deprivation, hypercapnia, which is too much carbon dioxide. And it says, you know, when people first put them on, they have all these symptoms. They said, but then those symptoms go away because your body gets used to them. Meanwhile, you're still damaging your brain. And so basically he says, you know, he says, many mask wearers have no clue this chronic damage is happening to them, is because once the person has chronic oxygen deprivation, all of these symptoms disappear, like dizziness and all these other crazy symptoms, because the person gets accustomed to the deprived state. However, their efficiency remains impaired, and the lack of appropriate oxygen delivery into the brain continue to dangerously progress. And you know, this is worse in kids because their brains are developing. They need more oxygen than adults. That's why after prolonged mask, many people say they don't mind it anymore. It's an unintended pun because they're losing their minds. A little joke there. But he's documented neurodegenerative disease that people have developed from wearing the mask. You know, there's parts of the brain like the hypothalamus that if it's 3 minutes without oxygen, it dies. The cells die. So if you're wearing a mask all day, guess what? You're doing a slow death to your brain. And the science bears that out. So that should give you more courage because the science is on your side to resist, I mean. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean if you took it to court, there's mountains of evidence that this is not a good practice, okay? And so when we come out on the other side of this, I hope that everybody would know never ever to give any government or any official this kind of power to think that they could order us to do these things, and because it, basically it's the same thing as Hitler putting a star on the Jews. It's no different. It's just discriminatory is all it is. So anyway,
I really think that what you and Brent both have said is kind of why I stood up, because there's something inside of me that just feels like I'm looking around and all of these weak cowards and sheep around me, I'm not understanding it, and nobody's saying a word. I mean, they're looking and they're just shaking their head like troublemakers, just like you said, and just like you said. And but I'm feeling good about what I'm doing. You know, I felt better when I went out than I did when I went in.
Well, brainwashing. They've been brainwashing us for years.
I gave her a notice, information, and a demand before I left.
There you
go. And they don't believe it. Well, I didn't tell them it was a notice, but I did say notice, but I didn't give them all the information in a way that it was pointed out. But the information was in there, and then I made the demand, and the demand, they ran me out. So I said, well, you can tell me to leave, and they said, well, that's your choice. You need to leave. So when she said that, I said, well, now you're aware you've got a potential lawsuit coming for deprivation of my rights because you're acting as an agent of the government unlawfully. I said, you're saying that you're just doing your job. Didn't work in the Nuremberg Code. It's not going to work here either.
And that's what upsets people. That's right. Those guys that said they were following orders, they ended up on the gallows. So
I wanted that mainly not for me and this woman as much as I wanted all the other people in there to hear, because I did notice the one gal that was trying to get me to originally do it. She was a young gal, and I got kind of riled, but I wasn't angry at her, and I thought she was going to cry, because she was really trying to encourage me, asking me why, and I think deep inside I could see she didn't believe this character, because I asked her, do you really believe this? Look me in the face and tell me, do you really believe this is going to help me? I said, I'm a vet. I served my country. I gave an oath, and I'm not going to back down off my oath. I'm defending my country, foreign and domestic, and this is enemy inside. This is the UN mandate, and if you go to the UN and just read it, you'll find out that Agenda 21 is a plan to overthrow the Constitution so they can rule the world, because it's the only thing standing in their way. And I gave them all of this information, because that's what I considered it. This was all information from my notice, and the demand was to stop it, because I'm not going to wear the mask. Well, they said, well, the only choice you've got is to wear the mask or leave. And I said, well, you can tell me to leave. And she did. So, you know, that's when I said, well, now you've committed an offense because you're acting as an agent of a government without authority.
Even with authority, they have no authority to tell you to wear a mask. That's a crime against humanity. That's like those soldiers that said I was following orders. You're not supposed to follow unlawful orders.
Unlawful order, exactly. I've done that before. I've done that in the Air Force. They were giving an unlawful order. I grounded an airplane, and they wanted me to sign it up. And I said, well, you got four different people that can sign that up, but I'm not signing it up. And he threatened me with a court-martial and took me into the commander, and I followed him in, and I let him talk first. And then when he got done, the commander looked at me and asked me, well, is that true, Sergeant Nix? And I said, yes, sir, every word of it. I said, I repeated a few things. I said, yes, I told him he could have the commander, he can have so-and-so, he can have so-and-so, do it, sign this up, but he didn't want to do that. I said, he could sign it off, but he refused it. He wants me to sign it. I'm not signing that off. If that plane crashes after the commander has done giving me an order that it repaired, I've done my technical test, it failed it three times, I grounded it. I'm not going to pencil with it because if something happens to that airplane goes down, I'm not going to be the responsible party. And he just looked at the other at my boss and said, "Is that all, Sarge?" Because I made him look stupid.
Right.
I was calm.
Don't forget, this whole mask thing is just a process to get you to accept a shot that's going to kill you.
Yeah.
If they could break you down on the mask, then maybe you can stomach the shot. That's a gene altering. It doesn't give you any immunity at all. It's not an immunization. So the mask is just a breakthrough to get you to accept the shot, which is basically eugenics, and population control, and all that other stuff.
Yeah, they keep moving the measuring line, you know.
Yeah,
And I see that, but getting these people to see it, you know, I've got so many family and neighbors that are getting the shot. They don't ever argue about, I'm not going to be a troublemaker. And I'm like, bah. I don't have a lot of friends.
You're going to see a lot of consequences from this winter. It's going to be terrible. It's going to be horrible because people are going to start dropping dead. But anyway, the more people that resist it, the closer we get to getting rid of it. And I see it happening now. Everybody's sick of it. You know, in my state here and in my county, you know, we do a lot of resort business, and it killed it. It killed it. Many businesses went out that'll never come back. And I think the county executive said, we're not going to do this again. There's 31 counties in New York that refuse to uphold the governor's mask mandate. And the reason is because they see the consequences. Mainly, I think it's business, though, you know, that they know they lost a lot of business, you know, because there's a lot of restaurants and things like that, bars and restaurants around here.
They ain't coming back.
And no, a lot of them are not coming back. And that's a problem. So that's a case of where the cure is worse than the disease, so to speak. So anyway, keep at it. That's all I can tell you. Keep resisting.
It was good to hear you say that because you and Brent both, because I really appreciate it, because I just wanted to make sure that I was doing consciously. My conscience tells me I'm doing right because I felt so good afterwards. But, you know, I just wanted to clear that to make sure, am I wrong or am I misreading it? Because I believed that, you know, it's all violation of law. I mean, that's the way I'm seeing it. And I just wanted confirmation.
In some towns and cities, you got groups of people going in and ripping their mask off and marching around the store. And that really intimidates them because the police don't want to get involved with that because that's almost a riot situation. But, you know, look at Europe and Australia. They're out in the streets every day for whatever good it does. You know what I mean? So they disarmed them 15 years ago, and this is the result of that. So they could go in the streets every day, but the politicians don't care. They only care when they know there's a hot lead bullet coming around the corner for them. Then they care, you know. So that's why we have the Second Amendment in this country, you know. And I'm not saying that we should come to blood wars like that, but under fundamental principles, that's where we're going if you keep wanting to insist this stuff.
Yeah.
Ultimately, you know, that's why we have the Second Amendment. But anyway, I want to move on. We got one other person I'd like to get through. So
all right, appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
Yep. Thank
Come
you.
On.
Yeah. Okay, Amy, you are unmuted. What state are you from?
New York.
Oh, how you doing? What's going on?
On the same topic as the gentleman before me, I did twice this week, went for a medical appointment, doctor's office. Actually, the second one was to donate blood. And both times I refused to wear the mask, gave my medical mask exemption card, which cites the American Disabilities Act violation, which is $150,000 fine. And both of them, they went into a huddle for like half an hour looking at the card. And when they came out and said, oh, no, you still have to wear a mask, I said, well, then you're all going to need to sign this liability, notice of liability. And then they took that and they look at that for like a half an hour. and then they said, I can't come in. So I said, well, I want to, you know, put you on notice that now you're discriminating against me, and I could sue you for discrimination, defamation, and public embarrassment. So then I left. But what I do next time, I was told, is call the police so I have a witness, in court could corroborate, be a witness that
well, if you're in New York,
and I left, yeah.
In New York, the governor said she can't enforce the mask mandate. She said it's up to the businesses, and that's a lie, because a business can't enforce something that has nothing behind it like that. They can't arbitrarily discriminate and decide that you got to wear a mask. I mean, if they're a private club and that's a parameter for being a member, that's different. But these places are open to the public, and most hospitals and doctor's offices, they receive federal funding, so that makes them a public place. They're taking taxpayer dollars. So 99% of them really fall under the fact that they are a public place, and they can't make these across the board rules like that, arbitrary and capricious. And so if it did go to court, ultimately they would lose. Because there is no law. There's no law at all. So what are you enforcing?
Yes, that's correct.
When the cops come, you say, well, you're an officer of the law. What law are you enforcing? Show me the law. And they won't. A lot of them are smart enough. They won't even show up anymore. They don't even come to those mask balls. But anyway, you know, I mean, you should get their names. If they refuse to
but
give
I took
you their
a picture. I took a picture of their ID badge, yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, they think there's no consequences, and ultimately that's the problem. There's no consequences. So,
the police won't show up.
They got nothing to enforce.
Police are defunded if they would take forever to show up. But you're saying
they don't have a stomach for this either. And when you say, okay, wait a minute, aren't you supposed to enforce the law? Well, what law is this? This is not a law. It wasn't passed by the legislature, so it's not a law. And you're an officer of the law, so what are you enforcing here? And say, look at you are putting yourselves in liability, like you told them where you're following an illegal order, an illegal mandate, if you want to call it a mandate. But a mandate is not a law, and they should know the difference.
That's what I told them. I said that they looked that up in Black's Law Dictionary, and by definition, mandates are unlawful. And then there were two sources I found this past week. One was a video. This guy, it was on Telegram, where he called with Governor Hochul's office in New York and said there is no signed mandate from the governor for masks nor vaccines.
No.
It doesn't exist.
No, it doesn't. Well, even crazy Biden doesn't have anything. It was a press release. where he was trying to mandate vaccines. There's no mandate. There's no law, and there's no executive order. He just released it to the press, and they ran with it. So, he's smart if you think about it, because the press is putting this false information out. Everybody's acting on it, but you don't see his signature on any of it. So technically, he's not liable.
Said the woman in Hochul's office said it was an unelected, who's probably funded by Big Pharma, who is an unelected official from the health authority in New York. And so he's like, so basically we don't have to follow it because it's not an elected official. And she said, yeah, basically. So basically all the hospitals, the doctor's office, the restaurants, the gyms in New York, and in some cases the police are you know, because there was, I don't know if you saw the thing where a bunch of protesters came in into a vaxxed restaurant. It was like the Cheesecake Factory, and then they got arrested or something.
Right.
So all these people are following what you said, fake news.
Right.
They're forcing a fake news. It looks like.
But basically, that should be a very easy lawsuit to win if you think about it. But, of course, today they don't go by the law. But technically, there is no law. They're enforcing something that's a non-law. You know, and it really is discrimination. But the doctor's offices are the worst. What's that?
Like the photo of the badge isn't enough. I would need like a witness, like a police.
Well, you could have recorded the altercation.
I should have done that probably.
You know, and that would be. But you know, that's why it's better to not go someplace without somebody with you. Today. Never travel alone. Always go at least in twos and threes is even better. But I don't know. I don't know what else to say. I mean, it's starting to come out. People are starting to stand up. That's encouraging. And it can't.
What's interesting is one of the people took the card and like they wanted copies of it for themselves because that's what I felt like. I felt like these people, you know, were just trying to do their job, but they really wanted a copy of it for themselves.
Yeah, so they could use it.
So I'm going to bring more with me.
Oh, you just took the words out of my mouth. I'm going to say you should carry more and hand them out.
Yeah.
Then they'll probably get you for illegally pamphleteering or something. Look at all those people that went to the Capitol that they're holding. A lot of them, they've been holding them in there for over a year now on a baloney charge about illegally parading with no trial, no anything, but an illegal parade. I never heard anything so ridiculous in all my life. And they got them. They're political prisoners, is what they are. To hold somebody for over a year for some baloney, you know, not even a felony or anything. It's a misdemeanor if it's even that, a violation. I don't know. How do you have an illegal parade? Especially if you're the only one. You better have about 10 people with you if they're going to call an illegal parade, because you marching up and down, is that a parade, or does it take more than one person to have a parade? I don't know.
I heard that the city of the corporation of D.C. is starting to roll out into different locations around the country. Like, because I heard on the M.K. Christopher call, you know how Australia secretly registered all their citizens to an offshore island? So they're not technically now they're foreigners in Australia, but they don't know it. They were never told that. And then they said that in the U.S., we were all made citizens of the corporation of D.C. And so, interesting, but that's
it. That's all unconstitutional. You can't make me a citizen of anything, and you can't make an agreement that I didn't agree to, that there was no, that's not a contract. I didn't sign it. There was no meeting of the minds or anything like that. If that's what you call an adhesion contract, they don't hold up in court ever. So if it makes them feel better, I mean, Hitler did that too. He changed some laws when he first got in and got rid of certain rights in their constitution so that he could do what he wanted to do. But it doesn't change anything. It's still immoral. It's still unlawful. It's against the laws of God and nature. So it doesn't change anything. You know, that's just to make them feel better about themselves. You know, and like Brent says, you know, if they're gonna forcibly do something, eventually you have to defend yourself. And so what they're doing is they're pushing for civil war. You know, I think that they wanted to have a world war by now because their fiat money system is falling apart, and they always use death and war to blame the economy on that, and they haven't got that. They've been trying to get that, and they haven't been able to get a war going, and so they're using the pandemic as instead of the war. They went the pandemic way, and it's not working, and now they're in trouble because this Omicron variant is actually healing it. It's very much more virulent than COVID-19, but it's not deadly. There's been 10 people in the whole world that have died of it, and it turns out that you can catch it whether you had 1, 2, or 3 vaccines. And when you catch that, and that new spike protein goes into you, it gives you immunity against all the other ones, including the shots. So this is a gift from God. Merry Christmas. Now, I don't know if some white hat lab put this out to defeat COVID-19, but or it just happened through nature. I like to think it was a gift from God for Christmas. But that Omicron is going to end the COVID so-called pandemic because we're all going to have herd immunity. It's going to run like wildfire through the community. It's nothing more than a cold. Unless you have, just like influenza, if you got, you can die from it if you're elderly or sickly or, you know, you have an immune system that's been damaged. But other than that, it's nothing. But, you know, see, viruses, they don't mutate up, they mutate down. They want us to believe that it's getting stronger, the mutations. That doesn't happen in nature because if a virus killed its host every time, it would be self-limiting. It would never survive. And a virus, by nature, wants to survive. So when it mutates, it has to be less strong. It has to be able to live in the body without killing the body. It has to live long enough to give it to somebody else so that it can replicate and prolong its longevity. So what's happened is this variant is a new variant that doesn't attack the lower lung the way the spike protein does. It attacks the bronchial tubes, which is much easier for us to get it out and our immune systems to work on it. So this variant has changed where it goes, and what it does is when it gets in you, if you have the spike protein in you or you've been vaccinated, it actually gets in the way of that spike protein. So that new variant, you should run out and catch the Omicron because it's your savior. It's a gift from God, you know. So, and that's what's going on, and that's what they don't want you to know right now because nature has basically straightened it out by letting it mutate so that it attaches higher up in the lungs. It doesn't attack the lower lung.
Yeah, just a couple miles back from the blood bank, I passed several block-long lines, people on the street, on the sidewalk, lined up for a block to get COVID tests. So I was like, oh, I would just walk across the line saying, you know, the test is a fraud, you know, the test is a fraud.
that COVID test that they're lining up to get, guess what? It's after December. It's illegal. The World Health Organization said they can no longer use it because it can't differentiate between influenza A, B, or COVID, and so they have to come out with a new test, and they're not worried about it because they know COVID-19's over. They had to come out with something new like Omicron, but I don't think they came out with it. I think it just happened, but they're always looking for new stuff. But you know, that the I don't know, if it was the CDC, they said that that test has too many false positives and they're not going to use it anymore. They can't. They said you got till the end of December. Why did it? Why would you use a defective test till the end of December if you know it's defective? And then you make all these announcements that, oh, we got all these new cases. Well, the thing is, 98%, you know, false positives.
Yeah, the guy who invented the test made a video saying it's not, it doesn't work for this purpose for COVID, and then he mysteriously wound up passing away shortly after that, and then.
Yeah, yeah. So what it is they think their agenda is going to be done by December. You know what I mean? They're going to have accomplished getting enough people to get the shot, that they're going to have millions of people dying from the shot, and that is the whole goal. That was the bioweapon for Bill Gates and Anthony Fauci's, you know, eugenic program. So by December, enough people will have taken the shot. They feel happy that they're going to we're going to lose, you know, so many million or billion people that have taken the shot. So
and that Celeste Solem, there's a video. You have to have the link saved, but it's not searchable anymore on banned.video. But she works for FEMA, and she said in that PCR test, it places a hydrogel quantum dot. It's like a nanotech thing, you know, that can cross through your blood-brain barrier. But it's basically a tracking thing, so they could track you with the 5G. She said, this is kind of dark, but she was like, it's so that, that after you get vaccinated, so they could watch you die. So I don't know. She's from FEMA, and that's what she was saying. So
oh, yeah, she's not the only one. There's other people out there. They have graphene oxide and all these heavy metals in there. And they claim that they can read your heart rate and your location and all that, you know, with 5G or some other technology, maybe, I don't know. But that's the idea, is to track you and trace you and, you know, and confirm that you're dead. It gives them your heart rate. So when the heart rate reaches zero, they go, yeah, we had another success, you know.
Yep, that's what she said. Yep, exactly, yeah.
Well, it's a crazy world we live in, unfortunately, and, you know, look, at we have to resist, and whatever of us survive through this, you know, we're going to be the remnant or whatever, and hopefully we learn our lesson, we never let this happen again. But anyway, it's now 12 o'clock, and I feel like I'm turning into a pumpkin, so I'm going to say goodnight, and thank you very much.
Can I?
Yeah, who's that? Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you, everybody, for coming, and we'll see you next week. God bless, and keep the faith, and keep your powder dry.